It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Christina Warren joins us, film girl from Mashable, along with Jason Heiner, her buddy Michael Rose, and, of course, the great Mark Millian from Bloomberg Business Week. There it is, a console war brewing. We'll talk about that. Snapchat, is it worth $3 billion? And the latest on the Google book scanning case. Here's a hint. We win! It's all next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 432, recorded November 17th, 2013. Bitcoin Assassin. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off on your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TWIT1113. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Visit audible.com/TWIT2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com now, click on the microphone, and enter TWIT. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. And boy, we got a great crew put together from Bloomberg Business Week and their new Global Exchange Initiative.
Close.
Global Tech.
Bloomberg.com/Global Tech.
Mark Millian, good to see you again. So what is Global Tech?
About six, 7 months ago, we launched a new vertical on the website that's, you know, covering tech outside Silicon Valley. We feel like there's...
Really? There's tech outside of Silicon Valley?
We feel like that's a common point of view. There's a hole in sort of mindshare around what's going on outside of...
We have a Polish entrepreneur right in the front row here, see? So it just shows you. It's all over the world. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Jason Heiner from Tech Republic. Hey, Jason.
Hey, always glad to be here.
Nice to have you once again from, I want to say, Knoxville.
we do this every time.
Every time.
Louisville, Kentucky.
It had a ville in it.
It does. You're right.
Louisville.
You're very right.
All right.
Louisville.
I don't know. I should remember Louisville because it's one of my favorite cities. I don't know why I don't remember it. I'm going to come visit you in May. That's what I'm going to do. We're going to go to the Kentucky Derby. That's what we're going to do.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Love it.
Do you go? Do you ever go?
So Tech Republic, when Tech Republic was a startup, when money was cheap in the dot-com era, we actually owned a box on one of the biggest boxes on Millionaire's Row.
Those were the days, my friends.
Those were the days.
We thought they'd never end.
we were burning $2 million a month at that point. But boy, we had an awesome box. But those days are gone.
Those days long gone, unless you're Snapchat. We'll talk about that in a second.
Unless you're Snapchat, exactly.
Also with us, Christina Warren from Mashable. And I love your hat.
Thank you so much. It was a birthday gift for my mom.
Did she make it?
She did not. She just bought it. Michael Kors, or people who work in a factory that Michael Kors owns, made it.
Oh.
But, yeah.
It's a Michael Kors hat. That's good. Yeah. Michael Kors made it himself with his hands like this.
Yeah. Right.
Nice to have you, Christina. And also here, Christina's podcast, Sherpa. That's what she called you. Michael Rose from the unofficial Apple weblog, TUAW, Christina's former employer. Nice to have you. You're here for Salesforce.
I am in San Francisco this week for Salesforce.
That's your day job?
That is my day job.
Dreamforce is the conference.
About 100,000 people descending on downtown San
Francisco. Unbelievable. It's crazy.
It's the biggest vendor-sponsored tech conference that there is. So it's
bigger than VMworld.
Bigger than VMworld. Bigger than Lotus Sphere.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's huge.
It was like 46,000 last year. Is it seriously 100,000 this year?
That's what they tell us inside. So,
holy cow.
You know, people who live in San Francisco, not associated with it, say the traffic's terrible. It's crazy
downtown right now because of that. Yeah. And half the audience, more than half, almost all the audience in our studio today is here for Dreamforce. So that's nice. Bunch of CRM folks. What the hell is CRM?
Customer relationship management, but Salesforce is bigger than that. It's a platform. It's a whole cloud platform out there.
It's a platform.
It's a platform.
All right. So speaking of platforms, Sony PlayStation. Hey, who took my PlayStation 4? I had one right here.
Oh,
that's all right. That's all right. It's okay. They took it back. We took one down. Took one apart just a few minutes ago. Our tear down of the Sony PlayStation 4. It's out. Sony says 1 million units sold in the first day. Of course, a lot of pre-orders. In fact, to most most accounts, more pre-orders for the PS4 than the Xbox One. 1 million units is a lot. I mean, for a game console, especially given the dearth of launch titles. I know we're not a gaming panel here.
Yeah. There was a huge line. I was in San Francisco last week and on Market Street. I walked by on Thursday on Market Street and they had their party going on. And there was a massive line. And then they had PlayStation 4. I was like, wait, what? This is for PlayStation 4? People still line up for these things?
Well, yeah, the Best Buy and the Mission had a line around the block.
There was a line in Brooklyn. There was a crowd standing on the street corner. So.
The irony.
Yeah, there was.
I guess it's because these are like, this is like a 100-year plan. It's only every 10 years that a new console comes out. So it's a big deal. I've read some articles to this effect that the console wars are a little ginned up this time. You've got Xbox One and PlayStation 4 coming out roughly the same time. Xbox One comes out in 5 days. But the launch titles are not particularly compelling. There's no new Halo. There's no new Gears of War. What is it? What are the Sony? There's no Uncharted yet.
There's Assassin's Creed, I guess, for Sony.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just sequels that are not uninspiring. Call of Duty Ghosts, which is already out on other platforms.
They may have paid those people to stand in line. I think this is a new marketing strategy. You know, you pay people, you go on Craigslist, you pay people to come stand in line, you know, $10 an hour, whatever. And you can't buy marketing like that.
Well, I think these people are genuinely very excited about getting it.
No, they were.
I don't understand really. Why? You can't play any of the old games, so you've got to play new games.
The hardcore gamer's still in full force. Plus, there's like some really great features now with being able to control your devices from your smartphones and tablets, and there's like some good second screen experiences that are completely new to this generation. Plus, like, there's no Halo of Gears of War, but the biggest game franchise right now is Call of Duty. So,
but you could buy that on the PC 2 weeks ago.
But not in like super crazy HD and like new features and stuff. I don't know. I can understand. I haven't picked mine up yet.
I'm getting the Xbox One. I decided up. Sony, you burned me once, burned me twice. Not going to burn me a third time. Go ahead,
Christina. We've got both of them in the office, and so I've been playing both of them for the last week or so. And Sony, actually, it was interesting what they did for their press launch in New York. They rented out the entire Standard Hotel, which is near the High Line. And if anyone is from New York City or if you've been there, you know that the Standard is a really nice, very expensive hotel. And they basically rented out almost the entire hotel and had games set up on every floor, and you could go into different rooms and play different games for all the different launch titles and other stuff. And it was pretty epic, I have to say. They did a really good job kind of trying to, I guess, you know, the launch title lineup isn't great, but they were trying to kind of, you know, show the future, some demos of what's to come and that sort of thing, and trying to get people pumped. And like Michael said, there was a big line in Brooklyn, and there were lines at other Best Buys, Union Square, and other places in New York City. And I mean, I think that the reason you've got so many people excited, right, is that, as you said, I mean, it's been, 7 years since the last PlayStation came out, and people are excited about the future. And then you've got things like the Twitch TV integration, so you can actually record yourself playing Call of Duty and like broadcasting it to Twitch and to YouTube and things like that. That's actually pretty awesome. And I mean, I think that's the sort of thing that the hardcore gamers and the people that are really, really into this stuff are going to be excited about. And, you know,
it's a shame that PewDiePies, just what the world needs.
I'm trying to remember what game system actually had a truly great launch lineup.
I mean, I think Xbox.
The Dreamcast.
Dreamcast!
Sonic Adventure and
Sega.
Older than her years.
Soul
Calibur. NFL 2K.
Are you two?
No, I was
crazy taxi. It's insane.
I worked at a video game store, $9.99.
Oh, that's right. You knew. You were there.
I was there, and I actually Crazy Taxi didn't come out until January, but there was Soul Calibur, NFL 2K.
Soul Calibur was huge.
NBA 2K. There was the Sonic Adventure. There was another one. I think it launched. They had a gun game. They had a really strong launch. The system, you know, sadly didn't really last, but the U.S. launch was huge. And I would say actually the original PlayStation launch was really solid. The Saturn launch, if you recall, was terrible. And that's basically the console that killed Sega as a hardware company, not the Dreamcast.
Yeah, I feel like game systems don't really hit their stride until a year or two in. I mean, launch
titles are usually pretty typical. It takes a while for developers. Play the little audio just to see if Christina gets chills when she hears. Can you hear the audio? Probably not.
Sega. My Dreamcast was one of the ones with all the technical issues where it was like burning into discs and
the scraped disc. Yeah. Hey, could you bring me my Dreamcast? It's on my desk over there.
they had the bass fishing game where you could fish with the fishing rod controller, which was really cool. And they had like the game where you had like little virtual pets. I can't remember the name of it. It was really weird, but it would work on the little VMU, the little C-Man. Virtual memory units. C-Man, yes, which was great. And there was an Echo game, and then obviously the bass fishing game was a lot of fun. God, I loved the Dreamcast. That was so good.
Me too. I have real nostalgia for it. Somebody just sent
Shenmue
me one.
Shenmue was so good, and it's amazing. Are you kidding me? That was like right when like Max Payne came out. It was kind of like the beginning of that photorealism.
You must have been 16 when this came out.
Yeah. Yeah, I was almost 17 when it came out.
That's why it's burned into your brain. You can actually tell how old people are from what sitcom they love and what it was the game sitcoms consoles. And what games they play. You know, like if they're really into Mario or Zelda or whatever. What, just this, huh? No Dreamcast. It's gone. Somebody, but you may remember this.
Yeah, I love the controller.
Ooh, it was a good controller.
It was actually a really good controller, and the VMU was really cool because, you know, you could take it, had a little battery in it, you know, it could go from place to place. I loved it.
See, it
the funny
right
thing
out.
Is, it is interesting about the age thing, because the people I know who were excited, like the first, you know, the second generation and third generation of consoles, the last couple, I've sort of asked them, you know, what are you buying? What are you excited about? You know, PS4 or Xbox One? And all of them are kind of sitting it out. None of them are really excited. And I don't know if it's just because they're all getting older or if they're just not excited. Because there is, as you guys have mentioned, there is actually some innovation, some interesting innovation going on with this generation.
Well, and these are x86. That's the biggest thing that's happened here, which is that these are essentially Windows-like PCs. I mean, anybody who's developed for x86 will know how to develop for it. Mm-hmm. And that means you don't have to wrap your head around the crazy cell processor of the PS3 or the power PC that was in the Xbox 360.
They were both power PCs, and it was a big problem for heat, right? Because, I mean, that's always been the problem with the power PC is you could theoretically get really fast, but, I mean, that's why Apple was never able to put the G5 into a laptop, is that they couldn't get the thermal correct. Right. And you ran into those issues early on, even when they released the PS3 and the 360. You know, you knew that there was kind of like a limit to how fast they could go. And so I think that Sony is the one who benefits the most out of this, because the PS3 was such a pain to develop for, that being able to have a much more like x86, you know, system for people to develop for, that's how they've been pushing this to indie gamers. And all the indie developers that I've talked to over the last few months, you know, since their big, you know, launch where they didn't even show off the console, you know, they've really been pitching them hardcore to say, hey, you know, you can bring your games, either digital download or whatever, you know, to our system much more easily than you could with the PS3. And I think Microsoft's going to be playing that up a lot too, especially, you know, presumably once, you know, the Steam Box or whatever comes out, they'll be trying to push more of the hardcore, you know, PC titles to get to the Xbox more quickly. But yeah, I mean, I think that the problem, I think it's kind of a shame that, you know, the biggest video game that's happened in a decade, you know, GTA 5, they didn't have an up-res version to go with either of the consoles. I think that's a real shame, because if they had that, you know, you have a $1 billion-plus, you know, title that you could have probably pushed a lot of units just from people wanting to play GTA 5 in 1080p. But
you don't think Ghost is enough, Call of Duty Ghosts?
I don't know.
That's a billion-dollar title.
It is. There have been some bugs with it. I think if they can get that worked out, that'll be okay. I'm just saying, I think from like a video game perspective, like it would have been a no-brainer if they had GTA at launch.
As I agree.
It stands, I think it's probably going to be March. But I mean, honestly, if I were either Sony or Microsoft, I mean, I would have tried to work with them early on, you know, with Take-Two early on, so you could have an up-res version at launch, just because that could guarantee you probably selling, you know, 500,000 consoles at the holiday season just on that title.
I would have bought it for Watch Dogs.
Definitely.
That's another one that slipped to spring that really would have helped.
But you know what? That's the good thing about this, right, is that this is just the beginning. And as we're all saying, you know, these things have cycles. So even if you don't buy now, that's okay. And I think that they're looking, all of the, both Microsoft and Sony are looking at this from a long-term plan where they're saying, you know what, we can have a really strong summer lineup and we can have a really strong next fall. Right. And we'll get the hardcore gamers now. And we can have even better stuff coming out.
This is a long-term play.
I mean, Sony told me directly that they're looking at this as like a decade-long cycle. And so they're not expecting or I think even planning on having, you know, everything right out the gate. And obviously a million sales, even though many of them are pre-orders, that's great. And the fact that we saw lines is great too. And, you know, I think Microsoft's going to have a lot of success as well. And they have, you know, arguably, you know, Sony's really gone after the hardcore gamer, but Microsoft has the much stronger brand in the living room. So,
well, that's going to be the other little bit of a referendum. I think next week it'll be interesting to see if there are lines for the Xbox One, because it seems to me, and you're obviously up on this, so correct me if I'm wrong, Sony's focused on the gamer. Microsoft has diluted that a little bit by also focusing on the living room, on media, on and streaming. You know, it's a media extender as much as it is a game machine.
No, it definitely
$500.
Is. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the problem.
It's also pricey,
It's pricey. I mean, that's the problem, is that you arguably don't have anything that's better if you just want a media streaming device than you would with an Xbox.
Yeah, I can get a Roku that could do 90%.
Or you can get a 360, like $129, right, which is a great device. The one cool thing I do have to say, and you know, Sony, they've been, you know, really pushing the game stuff, but Microsoft's really been pushing how powerful their system is. And, you know, you can switch from watching a video to playing a game to watching live TV nearly instantaneously. And that's actually, it works just like their demos say that it does. And that's something that, I don't know how many consoles that'll sell, but the fact that it does work exactly like they say that it does is really cool. And I think that, you know, maybe down the line, they're going to be looking at, okay, if we can get better deals with, you know, cable operators and that sort of thing, you know, your Xbox really could be your cable box. And that's a really interesting concept.
I'm willing to pay $100 more because I want the Kinect. Maybe I'm wrong, but Kinect was a huge disappointment, even though they said the fastest selling consumer gadget of all time. It really didn't live up. You had to stand 10 feet back. Nobody had the room. I had to move furniture to use the damn thing. And then talking to it didn't work well, and the gestures didn't work well. But if they can make Kinect 2 be something a little bit more useful, if I can really talk to my TV and say, you know, I don't know where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is, but play Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that would be huge, I think. And we'll see. By the way, this breaking story from 9 to 5 Mac, apparently Apple has purchased PrimeSense, the company.
Yep.
They created Kinect.
That was on the Verge earlier. That was on the Verge this morning as well. And yeah, that is really interesting, because PrimeSense was a company that apparently pitched itself to Apple before Microsoft and the Kinect came out. It came out of the Israeli Air Force, I think, is where the guy came from who developed the technology. And Microsoft, in this case, decided for the Kinect 2 to go their own way, possibly because of some of the issues that you talked about in consumerizing that technology, which was built perhaps for a slightly different realm. And now, if Apple's got that in its hip pocket for perhaps wearables,
maybe they are doing a TV,
perhaps the living room. Yeah, this could be very interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. So the current generation Kinect, the new one, does not have anything to do with PrimeSense, or are they still they must still be licensing that technology?
What
does that do for the Xbox One?
That's a fair question. I mean, they can still make them. What I saw this morning, I think The Verge said that they did not go with PrimeSense's tech to build out the Kinect 2. Now, whether they had a long term license and they just didn't need to work with the company anymore to do the sensors. Or they're continuing to keep a business relationship there.
Yeah, this also says Microsoft used the PrimeSense technology for the original Kinect, but has since replaced it with its own in-house technology. Very interesting. What a world we live in. We'll have an Xbox One teardown next week. We did do a PlayStation 4 teardown minutes ago. One of the things we're seeing, and I just looked at Amazon.com, of the almost 2,000 reviews on Amazon.com for the PlayStation 4 Launch Edition, there are about 500 one-star reviews for people who say it was bricked on arrival or bricked after I installed the update. Blue screen of death or blue circle of death people are complaining about. This sounds a little familiar.
It's unfortunate.
Sounds like any hardware launch, especially the gaming industry.
Yeah. Sell a million of anything that's, you know, you're going to have a few thousand.
I mean, the iPad Air has a couple of blue screen issues.
Is that an Air you
have
right there?
This is an Air, and I had Safari crash on me several times as I was reading the show.
That's depressing.
I just picked up a Retina Mini.
I got my Mini. And there are already people saying image retention problems on the Retina Mini. It doesn't end. Nothing's perfect, and when you make millions of them. But I'm very happy with the Mini. I thought...
Yeah, me too.
I have both an Air and a Mini. It seems like it has all the advantages of an Air. Is it fast. A lot faster than last year's Mini, which had a two-generation-old processor in it. And I think the screen is gorgeous, and I like that size. So it's really more of a matter of taste.
Yeah, this is my first 7-inch tablet. It's two big-size iPads before it. Yeah. And it's more portable. Yeah. I feel like, you know, easier to read.
Slip in your pocket. It's not much bigger than that Bloomberg card you've got there.
it's not much bigger than a Samsung Mega. You know, their 6.5-inch phone or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So
what is it called? The Mica?
Mega.
The Mega.
Mega.
It's ridiculous. It's one of those, I'm like, really, guys? I want to do a Goldilocks and the Three Bears, like, spoof with different Samsung phones. It's like, this one's, you know, you have, like, the Note, the Mega, and then, like, something else. Like, this is too big. This is too whatever. Yeah. You know, this is just right. Because it's ridiculous.
Miriam Joar had the HTC One Mega or whatever.
Max.
Same thing. It's like, swollen. No, this phone is swollen. You need to get an anti-inflammatory quickly. It's going to be
some topical cream.
Topical cream. Yeah. Something's really wrong with his phone. Well, lines for the PlayStation 4. We'll see if there are lines for the Xbox One. It's interesting to see that the console has really survived.
Yeah.
I mean, my focus group of two, which is my daughters, I can tell you that consoles are not anything that they've asked for the holidays or birthdays. It's given the choice between playing Wii or playing console games and sitting and watching Minecraft videos. Minecraft.
It's all about Minecraft.
It's all about Minecraft.
Minecraft, totally.
You should get them a Disney Infinity because it's amazing, because it's Minecraft with Disney characters. It's the greatest thing I've ever played.
I'm sorry,
it's
say Minecraft with Disney characters?
Yes, that's exactly
Mickey Mouse as the creeper.
Yeah.
So is it 8-bit?
No, it's for 360, for PS3, for Wii, for Wii U. It's awesome, and it's basically they've got like regular platformer games you can go through and earn points, but the best part is they've got this toy box mode, so it's kind of like Skyrim in that you've got actual physical toys,
but it's high quality graphics.
Totally,
it's
high
not
quality.
Yeah,
no, and what's great about it is when you go into this, they call it the toy box mode, you can create like your whole world, and they actually have different things like logic based setups you can do. So like if you jump on this platform and then this action will occur and then this will happen. So people have actually done things like they've recreated the very first level of the original Super Mario Brothers, and people have done things like recreating Mario Kart and things like that. And like you can do all kinds of stuff, and then you unlock, you know, these different things in the toy box mode, so you can have all these different characters playing together. And it's basically like, seriously, like I would describe it as taking the best parts of Minecraft with Disney and Pixar characters.
Is it a completely open world?
Yes. I mean, they've got a game part where you can play the games, but then the toy box mode is a completely open world where you can do whatever you want, and you can have all sorts of characters interacting together.
And all the Disney characters are in there?
And they keep adding more and more. Like, I just got some more toys this week. But, I mean, they've got all kinds of stuff. You know, a lot of the Pixar characters and a lot of the classic Disney things. You can put in, like, Cinderella's castle or, like, the castle from Sleeping Beauty. And you can build in, like, even have ESPN, like, score signs and stuff like that. And they've got, like, the Wreck-It Ralph guys. And it's really, really fun.
I will eliminate anybody who tells my kids about this.
Yeah,
they already spent too much time on
terrible.
Minecraft.
This is the worst thing I've ever
seen. This is awful.
My nieces and nephew have this, and apparently the report is that it takes a while for them to get the fact that there is the toy box and build out mode versus just the games, but that they do start building.
I think this is good though, right? I mean, at least instead of just playing a game and kind of being on rails, you get to create. and perhaps learn some logic. And
that's what my kids love about Minecraft. They love the creative, you know, bit of it. And because of that, they do that. You know, I'd say if the, you know, if they spent 10 hours on video games, you know, 9 of it was on Minecraft and an hour was on, you know, Xbox.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think what's really fun about it is that, like you said, you know, the logic stuff, you kind of learn programming without even realizing it. And that to me is really exciting as a way for kids to kind of see, oh, okay, by linking these two things together, that's how I can create, you know, this action. And it's a lot of fun. And so they've been trying to build out their community of kids who are building their own experiences for the toy box and then making them downloadable so that if, you know, somebody creates some sort of game, you know, for the toy box mode, you can download it and everyone can enjoy it. And it's cross-platform. So if you have something on your PlayStation, you can go over to your friend's house, log into your account on their Xbox, and access all of your stuff. So, but,
and ironically, this is not on PS4 or Xbox One.
No, it's not. And we'll see how long it totally. Yeah. I mean, that's you're dead on. I mean, we'll see how long it takes them to do that. But Disney Interactive is basically betting their future on this set. And then in addition to the, you know, the game, they've got the physical toys packs you buy too.
Yeah.
The figurines and the collectors are going crazy for those. Because you know, there are some seriously hardcore, scary Disney collectors out there. Like, wow. Like that some of the Disney fans, you guys, like, I don't even know. Like it's sort of insane. Like I've never seen anything like it.
It's mostly tablet and smartphone thing.
It is? Oh, more than a PC game?
Well, and PC a little bit. But I see it as a lot of, you know, at least, like I said, my kids, the people I know do it. It's all either PC or tablet is kind of the preferred way that I see most of them using it.
What is that term? I can't remember it now off the top of my head. Marketers use it all the time. Where you create Lucas was brilliant at this, a universe that there are many different entry points into. It's a marketing term. And the idea being you can get the comic book, you can get the action figure, you can watch the movie, you can play the game, you can read the
transmedia
novel. Transmedia. Nice. And that's this is like the transmedia writ large. This is Disney saying, yeah, you know, we can suck them in a variety of different ways, make them part of the Disney universe, and they'll never leave.
And there's also
brilliant.
And there's such an intimacy of the tablet experience for gaming, particularly for younger kids.
But how does this compare to The Simpsons Tapped Out? No, I'm sorry.
I love Tapped Out.
That's potentially where Disney could have a leg up on Minecraft, on Mojang, because the Mojang company has said we're a game company. Right. We look at Rovio, which is another Finnish game maker, and they're an entertainment company. They want to do this sort of transmedia thing with toys and movies and cartoons and whatever else. We're a game company. We care about the games. And, you know, that
Disney's
is
a content
limiting.
Company and Lucas is media companies and that's
multimedia company.
That's really
the
way to think of this.
And they want to sell toys. They want to create new movies.
They want to sell movies. And it's a great tie in. I mean, like I've been getting I got stuff right before Halloween for Night Before Christmas. Like they had a special series of limited edition figures for Infinity. And I was getting those in the mail. And it's
so you're
those
playing
things.
This game.
Oh, completely. I mean, like, I'm not even going to front. Like, absolutely, 100%. I think
and what,
it's so
what
much
platform
fun.
Do you play it on, Christina Warren?
The 360. The Xbox 360.
Should I be afraid? Should I not get involved? Is this going to suck me in?
It's fun. No, I mean, it's so much fun. I think it's just really adorable. And you know, I when I get the new figures, it's like I'll go without playing it for a few weeks, and then I'll get a new figure pack, and I'm like, okay, I got to go play it again. But when they had a really big launch event in January, and John Lasseter was there and some other, big wigs from Disney, and they were showing off the potential. And then it came out in August, and I really loved it, and I gave it a good review. And it's been doing really, really well for them, and I have to say, like, for me, who's just I'm just a giant kid, you know, it combines what I used to do with my toys but digitally, and the fact that you can create, you know, the Minecraft like kind of logic stuff and kind of do whatever you want and you know, the world is, it's a ton of fun. So
the creativity part is key, I think. The interactivity, the creativity part is what's really key. That's what totally sucks in, I think, people to it.
It's how you get parents to permit this.
Totally.
It's the real reason it's there. It's like, look, mom and dad, it's educational too. Kids like it and it's educational.
stickier. What's funny is when I was talking with some of the Disney guys, I was saying to them, I was like, in your marketing, you don't need to play up the game aspect as much. I mean, to me, that's fine. But like, that's just about grinding through to get more things for the toy box mode. They're like, yeah, you know, we really hope that that's what takes off. But we don't know if kids are going to get into that. I'm like, are you kidding? Do you not see how huge Minecraft is? Yeah. We see it. But they were concerned that there wouldn't be a lot of buy-in on that part. And you know, it's kind of turned out for them to be the total opposite. And, you know, but because for me, I mean, every kid that I talk to, not that I talk to kids all that often, but when I talk to, you know, kids of my parents, or, you know, my friends'
picturing
kids or
Christine
whatever.
On the street polling children.
She's been removed from several playgrounds.
Yeah. Hey, kid, what do you think of this?
Very awkward. Yeah. It's market research.
No, but look, if you go to Disney Infinity, infinity.disney.com, and you click the parents link, welcome parents, and they're selling it up. And by the way, parents, really want to get started, not only should you get the Infinity game and web code card, you should get 3 Disney Infinity figures and the Disney Infinity base playset piece and power disc.
This is total Skylanders.
Holy camoli.
It's a whole lot of technology.
How did I not know about this?
It's like so Pokemon fun, version 2.
It's so fun. Like, I'm really glad that I don't have kids. I have no plans on having kids, and I just buy toys for myself. But if I were a parent, I would be, well, I'd probably be playing the games more than my kids would be. But if I were a parent, I would totally get this because I think it's so fun.
I'm sending my children to your house, by the way, Christina. You should be aware of
you should. I have tons of toys. They would very much enjoy themselves because they've got, okay, this sounds really bad.
Come to my house. I have candy, too.
I do. I've got, like, big things of Starburst, like 2, like, king-size Starburst bags in the other room.
Oh,
that I've
you
been
no, stop
child.
Right now, please. So I think this is one of the things I love about the modern world is there are all of these amazing niches that you may never have heard of that are huge and vibrant and alive. Yeah.
Totally.
And, you know, it's everything from hacker spaces to Disney Infinity. And there's just all this stuff, this creative foment. I find it fascinating. And Disney, who has stumbled a number of times in creating an online presence and an interactive presence, they bought, you know, stuff that hasn't gone anywhere and so forth. It sounds like they finally got it.
Can we talk about developers for a second? Because, like, game developers? Because When I talk to game developers, a lot of the ones that used to be really, I mean, totally focused on console gaming, right? It was the thing. It was where all the money was. You know, I don't see a whole lot of them talking about Xbox One and PS4. So I'm interested to see if
tablets.
Others have.
It's tablets, right?
It's
That's where you want to go.
Mobile. Everybody's
mobile.
Focused on mobile right That's now mobile. That, yeah. that I see. Even what used to be kind of game houses or parts of game houses and all of that. And so that's what's going to decide the future of right. this thing. And things like Minecraft and the Disney thing are changing the game. I think I really
but
see.
But there is, by the way, there is no good mobile Minecraft. I don't understand why. They've got Minecraft PE, right, Chad? But there's nothing good. There's nothing equivalent to the PC version of Minecraft.
Right. So it's very feature.
That's a mistake.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And Mojang has now taken over the mobile development. So the theory is that they're gonna speed up.
They're paying attention to
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Might be too late.
But now
here comes Walt.
PC. The PC edition actually sells worse than mobile and Xbox. They blow them out of the
Even
water.
Even though you can't do as much with the mobile version.
Right. And the Xbox edition is completely rewritten in C instead of in Java.
That's interesting. Is it the equivalent on Xbox?
No, same thing. It has it's missing like lots and lots of features.
Well, and then maybe the world of Minecraft is moving in the wrong direction because it seems that mods are becoming huge and things that you can't really do reasonably in a mobile world. Maybe you could do on an Xbox, right?
Well, I mean, yes and no. There's definitely limitations on.
Don't people want to make their own servers, do their own mods,
right. and so,
all the stuff that really mobile does not lend itself to well.
But you lose a lot of you lose basically all the children if you're going to say PC only.
Right.
You cut out a huge market.
Right.
Of people who just cannot understand the PC version of the game.
And in the words of Dinah Washington. Children are the future, or something.
something like
we're going to take a
Whitney
break.
Houston.
Whitney Houston? No, it was somebody else before then. I believe the children are the future.
Yeah, that was Whitney Houston. That was the greatest.
Oh, all right. I give up. I can't win. Somebody look it up for me in the chat room. Who sang that first? Stevie Wonder? No. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we got more. Hey, $3 billion For Snapchat, no problem, no brainer. Not enough. Our show today brought to you by GoToAssist. The folks at Citrix do a great platform for anybody working in IT. I know that's a lot of you. If you have to do software support, if you have to do IT, you would love what you get with GoToAssist. And if you think it's just remote access, whoa, there's a lot more of new stuff at GoToAssist.com. Take a look. Of course, they start with the best remote access platform, the ability to support PCs and Macs from PCs or Macs or mobile. Mobile support, too, now, which is really awesome. You can have as many as 8 unattended sessions, too. I can go on and on. This is a very, very nice remote access solution, but it's not the entire thing. GoToAssist is a whole suite now of cloud-based tools, including their service desk, which let you track changes, keep track of problems as you solve them. Great. You can have a branded a portal for your customers, track incidents, change management, release management, a complete knowledge center that keeps your customers in the know. I mean, people love this self-service portal. And then you got to try the monitoring, which allows you to be up on what's going on and solve problems before they become major issues. You look like a support hero. GoToAssist. I want you to try this free. And when you do click the try it free button, make sure you check all 3 modules. I want you to try all 3 modules, the remote support, the service desk, and the monitoring. But I do ask if you would, as a favor, click that promo code link and enter in TWIT so they know you heard about it on This Week in Tech. Go, and the 30 days free. GoToAssist.com. All 3 modules free for 30 days. They're very affordable anyway, but I think it's worth trying. If you're in this business, you got to know about GoToAssist. GoToAssist.com. Use the offer code TWIT. So Snapchat turns down an offer for $3 billion. Apparently, Google, according to rumors, I don't know how reliable these rumors are, offered even more. What the heck? And they said no.
Yeah, Google offered $4 billion.
That's the rumor. They said no. These are a couple of guys. Look at them, 23 years old. They thought about this. They figured out Snapchat in their Stanford frat. What a surprise. The reason Facebook's willing to pay $3 billion is it's more popular than Facebook with kids, as is Instagram, which they bought for $1 billion.
Not necessarily only with kids. I mean, it's projected to pass Facebook in the number of photos that are exchanged per day.
None of which you can save.
Perhaps by the end of the year.
It's interesting that a product that could potentially be worth billions of dollars is based on just extremely poor judgment by its users.
Right.
who knew exactly. That was a feature? But apparently it is.
Well, I mean, and they're more discerning because they're not publishing pictures publicly. Well,
I think that's why kids like it. They know that these pictures don't live. So I can say a silly video or send a picture. My kids use it. And
that's a
contrary to
above.
What most old folks like me think, the kids aren't using this for sexting. They're just...
Sure they are.
Oh, they are?
Yes.
Some of them are. But that's not all it's for.
Our illusions
it's for. You do funny things. I mean, I use it with some of my friends, and we'll send each other ridiculous things. But no, absolutely. Of course it's being used for sexting.
You know,
I'm
sure it is, but I don't think it's as much as one might assume. It's entirely for sexting.
Yeah, I mean, everything's used for sexting.
Right.
Anthony,
what
is Twitter for sexting?
Right. What isn't used for sexting? But I think it's just fun. Kids like it, and they like the idea they can send goofy pictures and not have to worry about them living forever. It shows the kids are more savvy about privacy than we might have imagined.
No, the ephemeral nature of it is certainly huge. But personally, I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. I'm totally just, like I just said in the chat, I'm totally waiting for this thing to just go totally Groupon so I can laugh my ass off. Because, this is not worth $4 billion.
There is no, they don't even have, there's no revenue.
No, exactly. And the thing is that, you have to wonder how long of, I mean, okay, so great. This is the platform where everyone is using for this sort of thing. And clearly, you know, Facebook tried to create a copycat and it didn't work, which makes total sense because part of the reason you used it is because it's not Facebook, right? And you know, you don't necessarily trust Facebook not to store copies of it everywhere. Although, you know what? I don't necessarily trust Snapchat not to have copies of a lot of the stuff.
No, in fact, as we know, the NSA at least has access. And,
totally.
There are lots of programs that are with Snapchat. Of course, as with anything, you could always do a screenshot, but Snapchat's designed so if your buddy takes a screenshot, it'll notify you. You know, Leo took a screenshot of that picture. But there's ways around that. In fact, 10 boys, this is actually very sad, were just tried or arrested and accused. These boys are aged 13 to 15 of using Snapchat to make child pornography in Canada and Quebec.
And see, that right there to me is why it's really not worth $4 billion, because you've got to have checks in place for things like that, right? Like if you were to be actually bought and vetted by a real public company, you would have to make sure that there were things or filters or something in place so that that sort of thing can be reported. Because I mean, if that's the sort of thing where if it happens enough, that will take down no matter what your business is. You know what I mean? Like if there's any whiff of it being a haven for child porn, then there, I mean, that will take down your business.
Well, and this is why it's, you know, I mean, as you said, Mark, everything can be used for this kind of stuff. But the reason that this is perhaps more of an issue is, according to the police doing the investigation, the girls, you know, boyfriends would say, "Oh, pose for me for a picture in Snapchat." And the girls, according to the police, thought it was safe because the picture would not live forever. But instead, the boys were exchanging these pictures, saving these pictures, and eventually they were making it out to the internet. And so that's why it's more of a problem for Snapchat particularly than it is, say, let's say, for Twitter, where I'm sure the same thing happens.
The question about Snapchat is it AOL Instant Messenger or is it Twitter, right? I mean, the reason they turned down $3 billion reportedly from Facebook or $4 from Google, if that's true, is because because Twitter now has a $23, $24 million market cap, right? Twitter turned down lots of people that want to buy them.
Does Snapchat think that it will go public and get it and be worth $18 billion?
That's the only reason you turn down three or four.
Right. I mean, that's why Groupon did. I mean, Groupon turned down 10, right? And Groupon really thought that it could scale. And then, you know, there were people like me who was like, there's no way this scales. This doesn't work. And my fear with Snapchat is I think that it's a feature and it's a very cool feature. But unlike Twitter, which had obvious API potential and the potential to be more than just, you know, using it for what it was originally designed for, I don't know if Snapchat will ever have anything that's beyond kind of that sort of breakout moment. And then
do you
how
think,
do you
Christina,
it?
Are you smarter than Mark Zuckerberg?
No, I'm not smarter.
Well,
than
no,
Mark
because
Zuckerberg.
Mark thinks it's worth $3 billion.
But well, Mark right, needs... and for him it might be, but Mark needs to get the kids on board, right?
Yes.
Like so. I mean, that's the difference, right? Like. And that's why I'm saying, like, if I were Snapchat, I don't understand why you turn that down. You know, you've got...
I would snap that up so fast because I tell you what, that $3 billion isn't going to last 30 seconds. It's take a screenshot,
it's
kids.
Ephemeral. That offer is
ephemeral.
Go.
It's going.
Right, But Mark needs it for a completely different reason. You know, it's not about the technology. It's about onboarding the users. And that's a completely different thing. But I mean...
But he won't because, as you pointed out, kids are not stupid. And the reason that Poke didn't work...
Well, right, but see, you keep the
but
Snapchat
still using
name.
Instagram.
That Instagram is exactly. You know, you let it run kind of as an independent company, the way Instagram still does. I mean, it's basically their ad operations and some of their press.
But
things
then you
the
don't
same,
get the
like,
value because you really haven't onboarded the Instagram users to Facebook. They're Instagram users, not Facebook users.
Right,
sure, but to the market, but you can go to the market and say, we still have all of the users, right? We still have all these young users. It doesn't matter that they're on.
Right.
You
and
know.
Facebook gets to sell the ads and reap the benefits from whatever revenue.
But how do you put ads in Snapchat?
Well, that's the problem, right? How do you do that? I mean, you could obviously,
overlay.
I think, you know, you could have pop-ups, right? But that's really going to annoy your user base. If you have, like, every time you send an image, you know, you could have, like, a little pop-up come up, say, oh, you've got to watch this pre-roll. Or you could maybe have sponsored, like, they're trying to do the story stream thing, which is not going to work. You know, their storyboard idea, which no one cares about. What? You know, you could try to have sponsored things that way. Or you could maybe have advertisers send... You know, disappearing ads. I don't know. I mean, that's the problem, right? Like, I don't know how you monetize this beyond just what it is. I think if it had been envisioned as something more than just a neat feature, then maybe you could make the argument that there's a better business case to be made. You know, maybe if you could integrate it into other areas. But it's like, you know, I don't know.
Michael Rose.
I was going to say, I think there's a serious brand management challenge to say that I'm going to advertise against Snapchat when it is a service that has launched with this sort of, I don't want to say, you know, an air of, you know, child pornography or inappropriate content, but if you're Procter & Gamble, if you're Pfizer, how are you going to position your brand against the disappearing photographs?
You know where you want to be? Sure. You want to be on Candy Crush Saga. That's where you want to be.
I don't think it's known in the market that broadly, though, for that. I think that's maybe – and you know,
you're talking about Snapchat?
I'm talking about Snapchat.
Because nobody's using Candy Crush for child porn, I don't think.
No. But I'm not sure that the market really, when people think of it, that at least yet, that's what they think of.
In fact, it's really a problem because, in my opinion, Snapchat isn't really about sexting. It's partly sexting, but it's really more about, and I watch my kids use it, they do goofy, thick pictures. That's the problem, is that people like me immediately hear about Snapchat and say, oh, sexting. It's not maybe even the reality. It's just that's what the most obvious thing is.
Could be. But I think also on the monetization thing, remember, nobody had any freaking idea how Google was going to monetize. And nobody had any idea how Twitter was going to ever monetize itself. And while I would, you know, logically, you look at them now and it makes a lot more sense why Procter & Gamble would ever, you know, advertise on one of those two. You know, Snapchat, I mean, that thing's only been up for 2 years. I believe it was, you know, fall of 2011.
Take the money, boys. God, what you could do with $3 billion. You'd never need, you could start a million new companies.
But it's the hubris of Silicon Valley, right? It's like you're not just there for the money. Most of the people, or at least the really.
They're in LA.
The really passionate ones. Are they in LA?
They're in Venice Beach.
You're right. They are in LA.
You know, the problem with Venice Beach is medical marijuana. You go you can't go 5 feet.
A lot of meatheads.
They're just too high to take the money.
We don't need the money, man. What do we need money for?
Usually it's about wanting to, put a dent in the universe, as Steve Jobs said. And more.
I admire that. I mean, I think that's great that they're not thinking about money.
Well, one of the guys is already rich anyway, so it just kind of doesn't matter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's like a rich kid?
Well, if they went to Stanford,
he apparently is like a really rich kid. So
was it these guys or was it their investors? Because the other side is that the investors have a lot of say in this. I mean,
true.
Yep.
Yeah, the New York Times story said that Benchmark was pretty instrumental in steering them towards the long term.
Don't take the money.
Although I find it completely hard to believe that a venture capitalist looking at that kind of exit would say, no, just keep trying.
How much did they put in? They put in like, 20 million or 13 million?
God, what a payday.
The valuation was under $1 billion just last year at the beginning of this year. So
they got to want they have to want to cash out there. Somebody,
triple your money.
Somebody told these guys something that is doing them a disservice because they are now overextended.
Yeah.
And it may not work out well for them.
Candy Crush, how much is that worth? Apparently, they're thinking about an IPO. King, the English company that makes Candy Crush, released new numbers saying there are 500 million installs on Facebook and mobile devices, 150 billion games played to date. These are all good numbers. Do anybody play Candy Crush?
I actually gave it up. I was playing
it's an addiction.
I got to, you know, into the 70s or 80s, and I went cold candy turkey because I was spending. I was losing time. I mean, it was like a blackout where I was losing.
Part of the success of this is that, you know, because I haven't played it, you die, but you can come back if you get your friends on Facebook.
You can spend money. You can buy up lives. You can socialize. But the catch is that once you burn through the 5 lives or whatever you have at the moment, then you have to, if you don't either spend money or bring your friends in, you have to wait an hour or 2 hours hours.
That's a good thing.
It's a good thing, except
you're addicted.
You're losing the dopamine hit, and you have to wait. And that's what drove me crazy because I realized I spent money and I also
annoyed
was,
your friends.
I didn't. I never hit up my friends. That was the line I drew.
I get that all the time on Facebook from everybody I know.
I mean, that's Farmville all over again. Those are distilling all of the mechanics that made Farmville a viral success.
What a world.
It is, except that it then has the mobile component. And the genius of it is that unlike Farmville, which was just kind of a classic grinding game, you know, kind of similar to any sort of MMO or low-level MMO, because this is a match 3 game and you want to get to the next puzzle level and you want to have a chance to beat it, you know, you have that option to spend 99 cents and get your next, you know, pack of lives. And no, I won't lie. I've beat all the levels available for the iPhone. So I've beat all of those, and I'm at level I think like 471 or something.
Wow!
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not talk about how much money I've spent. It's a lot. It's like hundreds.
That's why I stopped. Yeah. I was at level about 43, and I was on the subway, and I saw a woman at level 371, and I said, "That's where I'm
this
headed."
Never stops.
I'm
well, according to King, the most difficult level is level 65, the licorice and chocolate level, and that's where people really get crushed, so to speak. Do you remember that, kids? The licorice and chocolate level. What a level, huh?
Well, I have this theory that it's like one of the like equalizing factors for all of us, because on the subway, you know, Michael is right. Like everybody from all walks of life plays Candy Crush Saga. And that's actually what's kind of great about the game. Like you have people like you have business guys, you have, you know, people who are maybe, you know, just like regular folks. You have like, you know, people with studs in their ears. You have like, you know, guys that would normally look kind of scary. Everybody is playing Candy Crush Saga. It's one of the equalizers, the great modern equalizers on the subway. Like we all are Candy Crush players. I mean, Bram Cohen, the guy that created BitTorrent, he plays Candy Crush all the time. And I know this because I get like live requests from him on Facebook, like all the time. Like the number of people who you would be shocked are Candy Crush players, which makes me feel slightly better about myself. Not that I've spent so much money on it, because like that's sort of stupid.
Well, how much is so much money? You can be honest with me.
I think about $450.
So yeah, I admit to spending $300 on The Simpsons Tapped Out before it crashed, and I was never able to play it again.
$300?
$300 in donuts. They owe me $1,400. 1,400 donuts, I'm sorry. But $450, if you think about it, I mean, a game, an app.
I know. Wow. And you know, the worst part, I don't even feel bad about it. I'm like, whatever.
No, you admitted that with blithely. I would have, you know, it took me a long time to really face the fact that I'd spent $300 on it.
I think they have AA meetings for that.
I need help.
CCA.
I was actually, you know, at first I was really mad at Electronic Arts because it got corrupted and they never fixed it. And then I was really relieved. I was like, thank God. Thank God.
Right. Well, that's what happened to me in Farmville. I didn't ever spend that much on Farmville, but it took me moving to get away from getting sucked into it. And it was Mashable's fault that I got addicted to Farmville. They made me review the stupid iPad app, and I got sucked in. And then it became like a good stress reliever. And that's what Candy Crush is. It's just like I'll be in meetings or I'll be, you know, on a phone call or something, and it's just something to do. And and I love puzzle games. So, no, I mean, I've come to terms with my addiction, and it's ridiculous and insane, and it's a lot of money. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it happens incrementally, which is what makes it so dangerous.
It is cheaper than Smack, although I don't know if it's less harmful.
There's people in the chat talking. Sure, if it's less harmful. There's people in the chat talking about the Star Trek Next Generation episode with Ashley Judd and Will Wheaton, the game where they have the addictive Google Glass that shoots
things
in their eyes. Yeah, it's happening.
We're going to get the glasses even. How soon before Candy Crushes on your Google Glass? Then you'll be walking into trees.
Candy traction.
God. All right, let's take a break. Hey, you know, if you didn't, I want to do Tom first, and then we'll find out what you missed if you missed any twit this week. So, Tom Merritt, what is coming up in the week ahead?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the things we'll be keeping an eye on the week ahead on Tech News Today. It all starts on Wednesday, quiet early part of the week. But November 20th, the Nexus 5 comes to T-Mobile for $450 in stores. Google shuts down its checkout product that's all wallet from here on out. And the Google Chrome Dev Summit kicks off. It's a two-day developer event in Mountain View. Thursday, November 21st, is Pandora's earnings report. It's also the Xbox 360's birthday, which bears on Friday, November 22nd, which is the launch of the Xbox One in 13 markets. Also, the Lumia 2520 tablet and the Lumia 1520 phone become available. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Tom Merritt. Now, if you missed anything on Twit, you missed a lot. Let's watch.
Previously on Twit, This Week in Google.
Did you see this? If I tap, I get the K for Kit Kat. Oh, it makes me hungry for a Kit Kat. There's more? Yeah. What? Cupcake. And then look what happens.
You ever get a real Kit Kat bar from Candy Crush? I bet not.
Kit Kat bar.
All About Android.
Matthew Holtzman is building the All About Android podcast game. It's an endless runner.
His premise isn't fair. Because if we're eating desserts, I'm clearly going to win.
Know-how.
Today you'll know how to pick a podcasting camera and then how to get a Raspberry Pi fully contained in an NES.
Gizwiz.
This is a traditional Western electric phone, right? With a dial and everything. And they take the guts out. And this is a cell phone. I put a SIM in it from T-Mobile. In fact, I'm going to call it.
Serious?
I am not kidding. What are you doing out there?
Well, the chicken looked lonely, so, you know.
Twit. I get your touch surface right here.
We got a priest, a chicken, and a phone.
Was that a real chicken?
No. Oh. Although, in Petaluma, it could have been. There's chickens everywhere. You go
they
down.
They just run around?
Yeah, there's a law in Petaluma that you cannot stop somebody from owning chickens. It's actually in the city ordinances.
Wow.
Because this was a chicken capital for a long time. Hey, you know, this is the anniversary of the Heidi game. Anybody? That ring a bell for anybody? The Heidi game? Christina's too young. I'm surprised. I thought Jason might know this one. So on this Heidi? Day in 1968, Oakland Raiders were playing the New York Jets. The Raiders were down 32-29. Scored two touchdowns in the last minute, but nobody in the Eastern time zone saw it because NBC broke to go to a television movie of Heidi.
Oh, right. Yeah, and it was like the best play ever. Yeah. Okay, I remember this now.
Yes,
it was like, and they cut in to see, and it was the Shirley Temple version of Heidi, right?
Yes. Or no, yeah, no. I think it was a...
Well, not Shirley Temple, because she was...
Yeah, that was a really old one. I think it was like a TV movie version of Heidi.
Okay,
I'm trying to remember.
Okay, all right.
Jets lost to the Raiders 32-43, but a lot of people on the East Coast didn't see it. And it was very, very famous. And it changed network television, I think, to some degree.
Right, because at that point they had kind of an agreement that if they could extend and, I guess, preempt programming rather when sports went longer.
Yeah.
Because before that, yeah, because they weren't going to preempt their primetime stuff. They were just going to go straight to Heidi. Yeah, okay.
I have to think that's the beginning of the end of watching TV on a schedule. It was the beginning of the...
1968?
Well, it was early, but I think it was what... People remembered that, and they thought, I have to get...
Some live television
someday somebody will invent a VCR and TiVo, and I'll never have to suffer like this again. Maybe I'm crazy. Hey, did you guys see all the hype? This is a Y Combinator startup called Coin. And everybody wrote stories, the end of the wallet.
Yes. Yep.
And it was people were going into our chat room saying, have you seen Coin? It was the most hype.
Cool.
You think it's cool?
I think it looks cool, yeah. I'm not sure it's totally practical. It's cool.
And then somebody in Europe, like everybody in Europe chimed in and they're like,
won't work in Europe.
None of this will work here because they use proximity sensors and not swipes anymore.
The idea is it is less than a millimeter thick card that you program. It has a dynamic magnetic strip. So you program in your credit card, you carry one card. And if you can convince a store that it is not some sort of thievery device, you can use it because when it swipes whatever credit card you told it to swipe. I was amazed at how people jumped on this like it was the second coming of, you know,
yeah,
Candy Crush Saga.
It's a really cool concept.
Which no one will ever use.
Yeah, I mean, it's just impractical in a lot of ways. Like, I bought something from Best Buy a couple days ago, a cover for my iPad mini. And I swiped my card on the terminal in front of me. And then the cashier said, okay, I just need to look at it and type in the last four digits.
Right.
So there's...
I talked to the CEO of Coin before this came out, and he acknowledged that there's a number of both behavioral and security challenges that are going to have to be overcome.
And of course, this whole Europe thing.
This is one of those situations where my new technology focus group of my wife says that she would buy this in a heartbeat.
She would
because she has a wallet that is stuffed full of loyalty cards and gift cards, and if she doesn't have the Barnes & Noble card, then how is she going to spend those $15 of Barnes & Noble credit? And all of that can be coinified and simplified down to
one. It could also be, in theory, Google Walleted or Apple Passbooked.
Well, I think this is even more practical than those.
Is it?
Than a Google Wallet. Yeah, because at the very least, you can swipe it. Right. You can't be guaranteed that a terminal is going to work with wallet.
And for the target card, you know, for that credit that you never use off the gift card, to be able to take those gift cards and virtualize them and know that you're going to have them if you show up at that store, that's a selling point. And also for business travelers who have a personal and a, you know, expense card that they have to use.
Yeah, but on the interface of that thing, if you've got more than, you know, five or six things and you're hitting the, I can just imagine it's like the channel changer, right? It's like you go past it. It's like, oh, shoot, I got to go all the way around again. You know, I got to keep hitting the button. I can just see somebody standing at a terminal hitting that button and they're like, oh, no, I just passed target. Crap.
The biggest issue is going to be that you've got to get everybody in the world to say, oh, I know what that is. That's a coin and I'll accept that in lieu of an actual credit card.
Yeah, I mean, the guy has been out there with his prototype. I mean, not even the sleek one that looks like this, his prototype with, you know, wires and the breadboard hanging off it, and he's been able to use it.
Why?
Because retailers will accept what
because
you hand them.
Because it swipes.
Because it swipes. I mean,
oh my God, talk, if I were a hacker, I would just, oh, this is great. I give you anything you want to swipe. What do you want to swipe? It's crazy. The one thing that makes sense is if you lose it, it has a Bluetooth, it's tied to your phone via Bluetooth. Your phone will say, oh, you left your coin behind.
Yeah, right. I think the thing is that you've got to have it, you know, the two interfaces together. I think the reason that this has more potential than, say, Google Wallet did and some of the other things is because it still has that physical element. I think that the problem with NFC that people haven't realized, in addition to the very, very difficult task of onboarding all of the point of sale systems in the world to using NFC, which is one challenge, is that people like the physical swiping nature. They like having that aspect there. And to them, it feels safer than tapping something, even if there's no difference.
Right.
And even if you can create, as this shows, you can, you know, take a copy of all the data that's on a card and put it on another card and you know, easily transfer that to something else. People like that physical experience. So I think that the genius of this is that it pairs those two worlds of having the management system of something like a Google Wallet or a PayPal wallet. And ironically, the guy who was behind both of those things, Osama Badir, is an investor or an advisor to this company. So
I just think they've got to have the best PR company ever, because it all happened in one day. Everybody wrote about it. Whoever did the PR on this, hire them.
They were actually good. They blast everybody, and they got to me too. And I looked at it, and I'm like,
It left me completely cold. I could see the credit card companies go, "Yeah, nice idea." No, and that's all they have to do.
Gardner in the chat room says this violates Visa's terms of service, basically, and it'll be a complete non-starter with anything Visa.
Don't give them fifty bucks. You're out $50.
I agree.
Well, if you do sponsor Kickstarters as a form of entertainment,
it's not a Kickstarter though. It's their own website, which is even worse.
It's cheaper than $450 of Candy Crush. But
we're not going to give Christina a hard time.
The other thing about this one, to Jason's point, that you can only do 8 cards on the card itself. You can load the rest of them on your phone and swap them on and off as you want. So the button loop problem, I think they have licked. But they do have some security challenges with PCI, the payment card industry standard, which has some fairly strict controls about where you can store this data.
Right.
So this is something that, I mean, if it works, it's going to be very cool. There are many, many landmines that could potentially make it not work at all.
Yeah, I mean, the promise of it is that this is the one card you need to carry, and we'll hand it. But there's so many pitfalls.
Only 8 cards. Your wife's not going to be happy.
But she can have the other 25 on her phone, and if she shows up at strange stores, she can swap it in.
Oh, she can with a phone.
Yeah. Okay.
The best thing this can hope for is to be an interim solution between the digital wallet and sort of where we are now. Right.
I mean, of course, I thought that about Aereo too. I thought Aereo, this is like there's no way this is totally transitional. You know, whole idea of an antenna.
The whole point of Aereo was to do exactly what they're going to do, which is to go to the Supreme Court and basically redefine what retransmission laws are. I mean, that was Aereo's whole endgame.
But who cares? Because it's going to all be on the internet someday anyway, right?
Right. Well, but it will. But this kind of forces
somebody needs to break their model before.
Barry Diller's just trying to break the model. So that he can swoop in and be the ultimate king.
Yeah, I mean, he's an internet media mogul. He's got ISC.
It's a Trojan horse.
That's exactly it. Well, and then, of course, the irony is that one of the people suing Aereo and by extension Barry Diller is, you know, Fox, which Barry Diller founded. So it's really funny that the W Fox or whatever is one of their
it's Barry Diller's up yours is what it is.
We can ask Barry Diller about this next week at the Bloomberg Business Summit.
Awesome.
Nicely done.
As you should.
Awesome. Where can I find out more about that, Mark Millian?
BloombergLink.com.
BloombergLink.com.
Find out more about that.
All right.
I'll be in Chicago.
Nice.
November 20th.
Microsoft, ladies and gentlemen. What a story. I don't even know where to begin. So there's a short list for CEO, one of whom, Stephen Elop, who was the guy left Microsoft to go run Nokia and is now being folded back into Microsoft if the Nokia acquisition succeeds, apparently thinks he's going to sell Xbox and Bing. Don't want those businesses. Another potential hire, an interim CEO. A number of people say if he's a CEO, because one of the rumors is Ken Turner does it for 2 years and then Elop goes in. And a lot of people said if Ken Turner ever becomes a CEO, we're leaving Microsoft forever. And then Microsoft, in some weird timing, announces we're not going to use stack ranking anymore. This was a very controversial employment and HR method that we talked about many times. Dvorak thinks is the single source of downfall.
Yeah, 10 years
Microsoft.
Too late.
Yeah. And then Ballmer says, this is all this week, it's my fault, and that's why I'm leaving. Microsoft failed because of me.
I don't know that he quite said that. This is from the Wall Street Journal interview.
Yeah,
he basically said he was part of. I'm trying to break a lot of patterns, and I'm a pattern, so I need to step aside.
Which is right, actually. If you're going to reinvent a company, become a devices and services company, you can't be under the guy who made them. You know, the Windows company.
But
the thing is, Steve Ballmer went in and did exactly what he thought he was supposed to do, which was he is a sales guy, he's a marketing guy. And he went in and optimized the crap out of every one of their businesses. Every one of their businesses got more efficient. They got more profitable. And they made a ton of money. So he's been kind of saying for the past 5 years, like, what are people talking about? You know, we're making a ton of money. Yeah. We're making more money than anybody. And but what he forgot is they're a technology company. And the thing about being a technology company is the product that you're making all your money on today is not the product you're going to be making your money on in 10 years. And so, you know, the innovation engine completely dried up over the past, you know, decade. And that's why they are there. But I will say on Bing, just to mention, you know, they talked about they're going to sell Bing. There is no way on earth they will get rid of Bing, even though it's not profitable, even though it's in big trouble. It gets them from a profit standpoint. It brings them so much data, so much valuable data on what users are doing and what users are, you know, interested in and all of that, that is very much part of the future of their business. And
also,
no
who would buy Bing at a price worth selling it?
I mean, Melissa Meyer might. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't even know about Zuckerberg. I mean,
Bloomberg is also talking about Alan Mulally.
Yes.
As one of the candidates. But it was the Bloomberg story that said that Elop would. Alan Mulally is the CEO of Ford, by the way, and one of the best CEOs, if not the best CEO in the country. And
but he's getting up there.
He's about to retire.
To run a technology
he's preparing
company
to
size.
Retire from Ford.
He's 68,
but he's so
right?
big. You know, he did Boeing and then turned them around and then turned Ford around. I
he's
mean,
a brilliant guy.
He is the consummate, like he's right up
turn
there, like best
artist.
CEOs ever.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a total Jack Welch type.
Yep.
He is. He's a total Jack Welch. And I think that part of me has to wonder if his name keeps getting mentioned almost because like Microsoft wants him to be interested, not so much because he's really actually considering it. You know, but they keep kind of dropping the name like, oh, well, maybe if this comes out enough, you know, we can make something work, because he would obviously be, I think, any company that wants to go in another direction's very first choice, because he's an amazing, amazing businessman.
I think he's the only guy they could hire. I don't think he's available, but I think he's the only guy they could hire that would get everybody to say, it's kind of like Marissa Meyer going to Yahoo. It would get everybody to sit up and say, well, maybe there is something going on.
This might be something. I mean, it would be a five-year job. If he goes, I think it would be a five-year job. I think he would go in and they would innovate. They would do something product-wise because he is such a passionate
car. He'd only be 70. He'd be 73. Yeah, there is a Microsoft car.
MS Fiesta.
And then he would groom somebody.
That's a good point with the Ford and Microsoft, you know, doing Sync, which has been one of Ford's most successful things. I mean, Sync is cited as one of the top reasons that people buy Ford cars. I mean, like when they do their surveys, it's something like 60 or 75% of one of the main reasons that people are buying a Ford car is because of Sync. And it's been tremendously successful. And you know, that was Microsoft. And I mean, I think that's kind of the saddest part about Microsoft is I think Jason was right. You know, like Ballmer did everything that he thought he was going to do. He's the sales guy, and he worked on sales and selling his two big products, Office and Windows, and then just didn't keep his eye out for what was coming next. But behind the scenes, because it is this sprawling, huge company, there have been a lot of people that have been doing really, really smart things and doing really amazing, innovative things that just hasn't had the chance to productize themselves. And you know, that's just the stuff we know about. Who knows about all the stuff that's maybe been happening that we haven't known anything about? And
all those people left too. That's the sad part. A lot of those people who led all those things all left, sadly.
Absolutely. But they've still got, you know, I mean, I think as far as research goes, they're a company that does some of the best research and some of the most in-depth stuff out of anybody out there. You know, they research into all kinds of really interesting areas. And, you know, they have a social scientist, like a psychologist guy who works at Bing. His name is Matt. And I can't remember what his exact title is, but basically he studies like user behavior and all kinds of other things. But he's a fascinating guy. And like they're doing these really weird, interesting things. It would just be great to see if they could productize it. And, I don't know. I think that the most important thing that happens whenever Microsoft, you know, chooses their next CEO is that they get away to a certain degree from the Windows branding, because that's really holding them back. I mean, it's their most powerful brand, but it's also kind of the noose around their neck.
It's legacy.
Like,
That brand is dead. Yeah,
it is. They need to make everything Xbox. You know, I mean, put aside the initial, you know, excuse me, you're going to have to believe that. Apologies. Put aside the BS around, you know, the Xbox One and the drama there. It is such a powerful brand. I mean, I would have called it the Xbox phone, you know, call it like Xbox 8, you know, 0.1 or whatever. Like name everything Xbox, because that is a very powerful brand. And that's the most powerful brand they have. Xbox search. I mean, shoot, I would literally like rename the company Xbox. Maybe not go that far, but you know what I mean. But
X-phone,
Windows,
X tablet,
exactly.
You know,
that's PC. What Mary Jo Foley has talked about this on our Windows Weekly podcast. It's her opinion, and her sources tell her that in 2014, or actually probably be 2015 for Windows 9, it will be very much a Windows Phone-ish experience, which is kind of Xbox. The Windows Phone is the one success in that Windows sphere.
Success then, by what measure?
Not by sales.
Or market user interface. Share or
user interface.
It's a good piece of code, though. It actually is
aesthetics.
A good piece of code.
It's nicely done.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It works.
It is nicely done.
Yeah.
And look, I mean, they've managed to become number three. I mean, you know, you look at what Windows Mobile was, and it was terrible, and they never
worked. It's almost 4% of the market, and they're doing very well in Europe. They're number one in a number of countries where the iPhone doesn't sell. I mean, I think they're doing all right.
But that
4%, don't look at me like that. He seems so skeptical, Mark Millian.
That 4% of the market is what, you know, what Ballmer originally thought the iPhone might be able to carve out. So there's some irony there.
Ballmer missed that boat by a little bit.
A little bit.
Our show today brought to you by Shutterstock.com, a great place to go if you have a blog or anything that you need images for, a great place for royalty-free imagery. Over 30 million high-quality stock, 30 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. And I just love it, whether it's for a website, a publication, an advertisement, or any other type of project. Many of the contributors, professional photographers, and artists, Shutterstock reviews each image carefully for content and quality before they add it to the library. And they still get over 20,000 images added every single day. I love the pricing too. You can get image packs, but you can also do a subscription. That's what we do. And I'm going to tell you how you can really save on your subscription. We have the 25 images a day subscription. Very useful for a publication. They also allow you to set up a free account. You don't have to give them a credit card at Shutterstock.com and create light boxes of images you want to save for later use. You're going to love the search tool. It lets you search not only for objects, but adjectives, you know, happy clowns, sad clowns, that kind of thing. The light boxes are shareable, so you can share them to your team members. They have a great iPad app, and they are truly multilingual, truly international. Multilingual customer support in more than a dozen countries. Full-time customer support throughout the week. You got to try them. Now, here's the great deal. If you use our offer code TWIT1113, you don't need to buy anything to sign up for an account. It's free. But if you use our offer code TWIT1113, you're going to get 25% off any package on a new account. 25% off. TWIT1113 at Shutterstock.com. Give them a try today. Christina Warren is here from Mashable. We've got from the unofficial Apple weblog. Christina, she called you her mentor, Mike Rose. We also have Mark Million from Bloomberg Businessweek. I'm not going to say it like Root B Dog. And Jason Heiner from Tech Republic. And
nice one.
Yay, I spinned that. Unexpected. Google, after what, 8 years, wins the book scanning case. This was at the time a huge story. Google just decided, we're just going to start scanning books, and we'll worry about the rights later. Of course, the publishing industry sued. 8 years ago, the Authors Guild sued. And in the U.S. Circuit Court on Thursday morning, Judge Denny Chin said, hey, it's fair use because it's transformative. It doesn't harm the market for the original work. Google Books provides significant public benefits, an essential research tool. Wow.
Gotta love the speed of the American legal system.
8 years it took. This is obviously the right answer.
Yes.
The Authors Guild will appeal the decision, so it's not over, and I guess it could go to the Supreme Court at this point. But boy, is this the right answer. In fact, it was Judge Chin who said, I don't think that he actually was very skeptical about this. Google had made a deal with the publishers and the Authors Guild, and he said, no, go back to the drawing board. But I think this is a really important decision. Now, a lot of authors don't like it. Scott Turow called Google scanning an indignity and a money grab. Who pays for the 8 years of high-priced litigation? The Authors Guild, I guess.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars and years wasted.
This was Marissa Mayer's big initiative. She was the one who led this.
Really? I didn't know that.
Larry Page and Marissa went to a scanner, and they were the first ones just scanning books by themselves to see if it would work.
Wow. You know, I mean, it's just so great to be able to go online and search for the contents of a book. I understand the issue if you wrote that book that maybe you feel like somebody's stealing it. But nobody's going to read the book that way.
I think it probably helped their case that they haven't really made a whole lot of money off of books.
Right.
You know, that you can't really argue that they've just used this as a big profit center. It really has just been like a loss leader, sort of like a research service so far.
Well, and if Google's goal, which they claimed is their goal, was to kind of index all knowledge everywhere, getting the books in there is a big deal. And I mean, isn't this the future we wanted, where everything is online and searchable?
No, definitely. And I think that just from a historical archive perspective, I mean, they had to kind of stop doing what they were doing to a certain degree because of all the litigation. But I mean, when you think about as a way to just have stuff saved and archived for historical purposes, you know, down the line, this is great. I mean, this is a huge opportunity to have books and magazines that would not be flagged as needing to be preserved for the future, and you have them preserved, and that's amazing. Or books that have been out of print for years that the authors aren't getting anything from anyway, you know, that people could be able to derive and see information from those books. So,
in the end, you know, on the bottom line, I think with the book scanning thing and where the Authors Guild was, you know, misguided a bit in the extent to which they pushed this was, I've actually bought more books because of Google Books than I've not bought books, right? The fear was, if you can look it up on Google and you find that one passage, then you don't need to buy the book. You won't buy the book and they'll lose book sales. In fact, the opposite, I think, is true more often, which is I look something up on Google, I discover Google Books points me to the fact that there's a passage about that in this book, of which it'll give me a certain amount of that book to look at. And in many cases, I'll decide, well, that's amazing. I knew nothing about this book. And I'll, you know, buy that book if it's something that I need for research or out of interest or whatever. It has certainly caused me to buy more books than it's caused me to not buy books because that title, you know, that information was available online.
It's kind of like a library, right? I mean, do we have to pretend that the library must exist in a physical space and has to have all the volumes in a physical space, and you have to go to the stacks and go through the dusty books and find it? Can't we just acknowledge the world has changed and now there is a better way? And author, you know, I have 13 books all out of print. I'm not worried about losing money because those out of print books would be scanned by Google.
Well, there's a.
You
there's
probably
a,
prefer that they scan them.
Hell yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Sorry, Scott Turow. You've made plenty of money. This is not going to cost you a penny.
But the challenge with comparing them to a physical library is there's implicit scarcity in a physical library. There's only so many copies on the shelves. Yes. The shelves are only so large. And so you can't disrupt the market for those commercially viable books by having a library of infinite size. What Amazon and Google and, you know, the other ebook vendors are able to do is actually make a library that does not have a physical limit, and that creates that creates disruption. Whether it's going to be bad for the authors in the long run because they're losing revenue, or good because of that discoverability that Jason was talking about, is too soon to tell. But it's certainly not completely dismissible to say they don't have an issue. They have an issue.
Yes, true. But it's the hard part. What you're exactly right, Mike. I think the problem is we're in between two models, right? I mean, the actual, you know, having scarcity versus having sort of infinite availability are completely different economic models, and being in between them is the difficult place to be when the economics, especially your economics and your livelihood, is based on the one that you're moving from.
Yeah, you're tripping over the long tail and whacking your head on the kitchen counter. It's very uncomfortable.
Excellent.
I don't want to diminish the feelings of – well, I do want to diminish the feelings of authors. You know what? The world is changing. And the benefits – and I think this is what Judge Chin was saying. The benefits to society far outweigh the somewhat minor concerns of authors. This is not going to cost authors sales. And the benefits to society are so huge here that I think that was the right thing to say. Now, we'll see what happens on appeal. The Authors Guild plans to spend many more millions of dollars and continue to fight this all the way up to the top. Another Google story, but not a victory. It turns out, I was surprised to read this, that despite the Apple Maps debacle, according to The Guardian and ComScore, Apple iPhone users did not abandon Apple Maps and go to Google Maps in droves. And in fact, Google Maps, when it lost the iPhone, lost 23 million mobile users. 81 mobile users at its peak September last year. It lost 23 million of them who just said, Apple Maps is good enough. I'm not going to doubt. And of course, it took a while for Google to come out with a Google Maps for iOS.
And there's still a big barrier to entry. I mean, a lot of people who aren't all that tech savvy don't know to go to the App Store to download the Google Maps version.
I got Plus, Maps. Like, it says Maps. I got Maps.
You click an address from an email or a text message, it takes you to Apple Maps.
It's the power of the default. I mean, this is why Microsoft got sued over IE being the default browser. There's incredible power in having the thing that comes up when you press the button. I mean, what's interesting is that even now there are some deficiencies in Apple Maps and reasons that people get driven to Google Maps for transit directions, for example. And that's part of why Apple bought Embark earlier this year, is to start...
And Hopstop,
start pulling that capability back.
Even for driving directions, it's still not there. Even in Apple's backyard in the Bay Area, it sends me on insane routes. And I like the design better of
it's
Apple
prettier.
Than
yeah.
Google, but I it still is. Have to use Google in ways because Apple doesn't know where it's going.
Well, there's a certain baseline of, like, for non-expert users of core capability and core functionality that once it's good enough, once it's an 80 or 90% solution... You will not motivate millions of iPhone users to go download a better Maps app because the one they have that comes with the phone is good enough.
The trouble is that Maps is such a hard thing to do because these businesses are changing constantly. You know, the even Apple will move their store a couple blocks, and I'm sure they know when to change their maps on their store. But, you know, small businesses are cycling in and
Google
out.
Google has
frequently.
A huge advantage there, though, right? Because of Google Places,
they've
businesses
got a sales
keep their directories up to date.
And they've got a sales force that's calling businesses.
They've got people
to
out
make
there.
Sure
that's
there.
Their and, business is selling.
Yeah. And Waze, too. I mean, the fact that Google bought Waze is
huge.
Waze is amazing.
That gets users updating the maps.
That gets users not only updating the maps, but updating the routing, updating the traffic, updating the construction.
The traffic is the huge thing.
It's astonishing to watch Waze, a heavily trafficked corridor on Waze and just see the thousands of people that are participating in that conversation.
So was it a mistake for Apple to say we can do maps? I mean, is it, it despite the fact that the tyranny of...
I think it's a mistake to not take it very seriously. I think they could have done... I think they could have ponied up a little more money to get Waze.
They should have bought Waze.
They were in discussion for Waze. And I think they're, you know, they've got this instilled culture of, you know, getting inexpensive deals and, you know, not overpaying for things. But when you're fighting in a hot space like navigation and mapping, you need to pony up some serious money.
Yeah.
I think Waze may have chosen Google, honestly. I don't think it was a money problem. I think Apple may have done whatever it could to get Waze. But I think Waze chose Google.
Well, I mean, a possible factor is that Waze wanted to stay in Tel Aviv, or at least keep their engineering resources there, and Apple is a very headquarter-centric company. That could have played into it.
Although Apple now owns Apple's a bunch of Israeli companies.
They bought a lot of security companies.
They just bought one.
They
are.
Yeah.
They're big in Israel, too. Everybody's big in Israel. I mean, all of these companies.
I'm big in Israel.
We're all huge in Israel.
Yeah. I was just there a couple of weeks ago in Tel Aviv, and it's
were they talking
pretty
about
insane.
Me? Oh, sorry.
They were like, you know, Leo Laporte? It's awesome.
No, it is amazing. The startup community in Israel is phenomenal.
It's exploding. American Western investors are just going nuts about kicking money into these companies now, and it's really a great time for the entrepreneurs over there.
It is. I wrote a big long-form piece on Google on them trying to create the next Silicon Valley there, actually at Ben Gurion University, which is south of Tel Aviv, but they are doing some pretty amazing things.
It's in the north where they've got, I mean, Tel Aviv itself, you know, just on Rothschild Boulevard has a ton of companies, but in the north you've got Microsoft and Google, and everybody's got some presence up there.
Yeah, in Haifa, it's big.
Our show today brought to you by Audible.com. Audible Platinum account awaiting you for free for the first 30 days. That means two books. I've talked about Audible before. I shouldn't have to tell you about the world's best audio bookstore. 150,000 titles strong. They've got classics. Anne Hathaway reading The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. They've got brand new novels, the John Grisham Sycamore Row, which just came out. They've got books about the technology industry, must-read books like Stephen Levy's In the Plex, How Google Thinks, that the Amazon book, story, which I'm really dying to read. What is the name of that? I really want it. The Everything Store.
The Everything Store.
Brad Stone's story about Amazon. We had Nick Bilton in here, and his book, Hatching Twitter, is on there, too. It really is a great resource for people who want to follow the tech industry.
Hatching Twitter is one of the best read books, by the way.
Is it?
The dramatic reading in that is phenomenal. One of the best listened to in a long time.
Here's a little excerpt from Hatching Twitter. Daniel May is reading.
Pulling the door closed, a metal clicking sound reverberating through the room as he grabbed the black wastebasket in the corner of his office, his hands now shaking and clammy.
Oh!
This was it.
His last
act as the CEO of Twitter would be throwing up into a garbage can.
That's from the very beginning of Hatching Twitter, and it's what a story that is. So here's the deal. You can get that and the Amazon book or many other great books. I like to alternate fiction with nonfiction. It's kind of just the way I work. But if you've got two books for free, it's up to you. Visit audible.com/twit2. Sign up for the Platinum account. That's two books a month. Not only will you get two books, but you'll also get the daily digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, your choice, every single day. Well, maybe 5 days a week. I guess there's not a Sunday Wall Street Journal. It is a fabulous deal, and we're going to give it to you free for the first 30 days. Cancel at any time. Pay nothing in the first 30 days. Those books are yours to keep forever. Audible.com/twit2. The offer is good in the U.S. and Canada. But, of course, you can go to your local Audible store and take a look anyway. It's great. We just love it. Audible.com/twit2.
Devastating ending to that Niners game.
Oh, man, I'm just dying here watching the
New Orleans kind get of the field goal.
Corner of my eye. It's not going to be a happy time at home. Let's go home after the show tonight.
Speaking of Google, the creator of Minecraft tweeted today, Google managing to make YouTube comments worse is one of the most impressive feats in all of human history.
Are they worse now? So what Google did was you have to be...
I don't think they're worse.
I would think they'd be better because they're tied to you, yeah. Right? So you can no longer comment anonymously on YouTube. You have to have a Google Plus account and comment with your Google Plus account.
All the comments are people complaining about the new Google
People
comments,
are pissed off about it. But yeah, I think the comments were... It was so horrible on YouTube.
There was no way to get any worse. I mean, there's no way they could have possibly gotten any worse. I mean, it was like a Turkish bath. You put one toe in the water and you feel dirty all over. I mean, it is terrible. Before
so, I never read the comments because of that. Right?
No.
You don't want to read them. But people, YouTubers are very pissed off. Why are they so pissed off? Who wants to channel a YouTuber tonight?
I can.
We want to troll, damn it. We want
to
troll.
Chad will do it because Chad, the host of This Week in YouTube, probably the best person to comment on this. Chad Johnson. Why?
So what happened is YouTube has finally done the thing that they've wanted to do, which was link Google Plus profiles with YouTube accounts.
And they delayed that for a long time.
And even if you delay, like you could still like say, no, I don't want to do it yet. But it got super annoying. Like they would message you every single day, right. Even if you had said like, no, stop bothering me. They would kept asking you. And so now that these two services are linked, and you have to comment through Google Plus, basically. So basically on YouTube, you have to go. You don't have to go to another service, but you're using another service to comment now. And so this will do a few different things. One, if you're making a comment and you forget to uncheck the little box that says post this to my Google Plus profile, it will automatically post your comment to your profile. There are some features that it's added, which it added threaded conversations. So if you have a comment, people can respond. And you now have a much higher limit. You could only use like 240 characters before, and now you can go crazy with it. The things that people are upset about is that the algorithm for ranking the comments higher is completely changed. And so if you have a popular comment, it will always show up at the top for everyone, which means that if you get any famous person commenting, they're going to be at the top. And a lot of people feel like that's as a form of censorship, that not everyone is on the same playing field anymore. And
I can understand being upset because you can't create an anonymous YouTube posting account as easily, right?
Right.
But you have to create a page and has a name, and you can still do it.
You can
it.
Use your profile, yeah.
But it is associated with you, and that I can understand. But man, it fixed the comments. You got to look. I mean, I'm looking at the comments on Windows Weekly. Admittedly, far fewer, but every one of them is like a real comment. There's no fanboy saying, "Why is Leo Laporte so old?" Or you know, how? It's just there was so much garbage. So I mean, okay, yeah, maybe it's the ranking situation isn't as good.
And to be honest, I think most people are upset because the transition was so weird.
It was very abrupt.
It's two completely different systems. They can't talk to each other. So if you had a comment, the reply button was just gone. There is no way to respond to those comments. Also, if you have like spam comments, they're sort of in this weird limbo where you can't remove them because they're on the old comment system and you don't have any moderation tools for that comment system anymore. So I feel like a lot of the hate is coming from the transition. Any video that's uploaded from now on will have the new comment system from the very beginning, and I feel like it is a better system. Yeah. Right.
So yeah, it is a better system.
Justine had a great video that she put together that sort of summed this up. Chad did an awesome job too. But I think you guys even had her on this week.
We did. We did. So yeah. This last Monday's episode, we had Justine on.
Yeah. She has a great video. It's like an 8-minute video or a 6-minute video or something that sums up the whole issue, the good and the bad too. So if you're interested in this, I think that's an awesome place.
Yeah, it's not the gold iPhone twerk or the unicorn baby making. It's Google Plus and YouTube merge, right? Yeah, I want to make sure. I want to make sure I get the right one. And by the way, we don't mind a legal Zoom ad since they're an advertiser on our network as well.
So I just want you all to know, in case you haven't heard the news, Google Plus has merged with YouTube. So if you're trying to leave a comment right now and you can't, it's probably because you haven't linked up your Google Plus account to your YouTube account, thus causing chaos. I feel like Google Plus is trying to...
She also has enabled censorship of certain words. So she mentioned that in
Oh, you
in
can do
videos.
That.
Yeah, so now you can whitelist or blacklist or basic blacklist certain words. And so you can't So, you know, she mentions, you know, if I don't want you to say blank on my channel, herself. Yeah, she bleeps herself, yeah. Then you're not going to say blank on my channel. And you're noticing, Leo, that you're seeing stuff that people from your circle.
These are people I follow. So right. they get higher up.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But that's, I care more about the people I know's comments. I mean,
the features are great. You can now, like, say a comment that's only shared with a circle. So if you want to say to your right. family,
look
you
at
know, this
video,
guy is an I'll, idiot, right, or whatever, it's not public.
And Mike Elgin points out as a comment, by the way, to the iJustine video, that it also shares stuff on Google Plus when you comment on it. So if you don't turn yep. that off, it's going to be a valuable promotional tool, right?
I can say from talking to the other YouTubers, all of their view counts have risen because it's automatically shared socially when you comment on a video.
See, now, admittedly, Google Plus isn't the most viral of social networks and has kind of a limited appeals to people like me, but probably less so to, you know, than say, Facebook or Twitter.
Are you still using it avidly?
I read it every single day. I don't post that much on it, but I do read it all the time. I like it because the quality's higher there.
Tell you what, it's no Snapchat.
It's no Snapchat. I keep looking for those sexting.
It's no Snapchat, yeah.
You should read the comments I get on my Google Plus page.
Oh, well, I know a number of women who've left Google Plus because it is, unfortunately, welcome to the internet. That's very sad.
Totally.
And
totally.
On behalf of men everywhere, I apologize. I don't know what...
I second that.
What do you do about that? I mean, it's not okay, guys. Knock it off. Get out of... Crawl back into your hole. Go away.
Well, Google Plus is... I think it's like, if you look at the demographics, it's something like... 40% engineers, 20%, you know.
Yeah, that's why I like it.
IT
smart
professionals,
people.
80%. It's all sort of people in the tech industry. And as we know, the tech industry is like 90% male. And so there's a misogynistic strain to Google Plus.
Yeah, but that's not the creepers that are bothering Christina, I'm sure. Right,
no,
Christina?
No, I mean, no. Well, I mean, some of them are, but no. For the most part, okay. It's just... But it's fine. I mean, it is what it is. It's just one of those things.
You know, I don't.
You know what I mean?
Let me honor you because to be a woman on the internet, public woman on the internet, is such a brave thing to do. And you're so smart. And you're so good. And you soldier on. I just don't know how you do it, frankly. I mean, I get a lot of nasty comments, but not anything like any woman gets. You know, on the internet, it's sad.
You don't get a lot of women coming on to you on the internet.
No, I don't know why. I beg for it. I plead for it.
It's baffling.
Nothing. Zero. No, I'm just joking. Anyway, thank you for being brave, Christina. And super smart and good. Damn it.
Here.
Jeremy Hammond says, my days of hacking are done. He's a little bit bitter about it. He's the anonymous hacker who hacked Strat4, releasing millions of emails relating to this private intelligence firm. He was sentenced on Friday to 10 years in jail plus 3 years supervised release. He did plead guilty to a count of computer fraud and abuse. He says the lengthy prison sentence was a vengeful, spiteful act designed to put a chill on politically motivated hacking. He also points out that at the same time as he's hacking Strat4, he kept getting suggestions from another anonymous hacker named Sabu, who we later found out was a FBI informant. And Sabu kept saying, oh, you got to hack this nation state. You got to hack this nation state. And he even says, I never heard of Strat4 until Sabu brought in another hacker who told me about it. Practically, I would have never done the Strat4 hack without Sabu's involvement. And you got to wonder how much entrapment was involved by the FBI in all of this. You know, they want to get these guys and make examples of them. They really do.
I got to say, some of the Silk Road backstory on the
isn't that
hacking
something?
And just the insanity there is
cray cray
has replaced Anonymous as the most interesting. Although the Mega Upload guy is pretty good too.
Kim.com.
Yeah.
Kim.com.
The whole sex stuff was really fascinating. I'm not going to lie. Sabu's whole thing, if reading those IRC logs, so cray.
Tell us. Don't keep it a secret. What? Tell me. I don't know what you're talking about.
The Silk Road guy tried to have somebody killed who was extorting him, and he was just doing some insane. He was just like, you know, supposedly some libertarian just like kid that was, you know, oh,
that's
I'll
the problem with hackers. They're anarchists.
Gets caught up in it, and he, you know, somebody was trying to extort him, and he paid somebody in bitcoins to try to have this guy assassinated.
Okay, so tip number one: if you're hiring a murderer, a bitcoin is not the way to pay for it.
Well, better than cash.
It's anonymous, but I think people want cash.
Yeah, and I think you're probably not going to find a good hitman.
Good hitman's not going to be
a very nerdy hitman. That's one thing.
Yeah. I'm thinking he's probably going to need to be paid in cash and probably going to be better connected. Or I don't know.
You give me some Bitcoin. You know. Actually, with what is Bitcoin up to now? 460, something
like that? I was going
like
to say,
that?
Maybe yeah. They'd be smarter.
Savvy assassins.
Savvy assassins take Bitcoin. Its current price.
Yeah, savvy
whoa.
Savvy assassins probably aren't on IRC. That's the whole thing.
Right. $527 on Mt. Gox for Bitcoin. Wow.
Should have bought it 100.
I have like 6 Bitcoins because we take Bitcoin donations.
Oh, nice.
It's going up in value rapidly. Yeah.
Wow.
You know who has a lot of Bitcoin? Steve Gibson, early in days of Bitcoin mining, just thought he'd try his hand at it and got 50 Bitcoins almost right away.
Oh,
he's sitting on 25 grand worth of Bitcoins.
I've got like 10 or 11. I bought when it was at like 14.
Well, that's a good investment.
Wow.
One of those pays for the Candy Crush habit. So you're
there you go. No wonder she could afford it.
One of those takes the whole Candy Crush bill.
Exactly. No joke.
See?
I didn't realize it was at that high. I will cash one in and then I will feel better about all erased.
See?
Done. There you go.
Thank you.
Man, why didn't I become a Bitcoin miner in the early days? Anything else? What I'm looking at stories here. Do you guys anything that you really excited to talk about here?
Google Glass 2.0.
Oh, woo woo!
Actually,
can't wait.
I did get some interesting information from somebody that at Google that didn't want to speak on the record.
Okay.
But they talked about the fact that there's this little there's a little screw on this thing. See right there.
Are you wearing your glass right now? Oh, yeah. Okay. So you're a glass owner. You're a glass hole.
Yeah.
I was going to say you are a glass hole. Come on.
Exactly. That screw is going to come off, and these new, more fashionable glasses and with prescription lenses, there's going to have a kit that's going to take that screw off, and then the lenses will have something that connects to that thing. You see, the whole metal band will come off.
So that metal band is not part of the glass. That's just a thing.
No,
and the glass, which is the little computer and battery here, detaches, and you can put it on something much more attractive.
Yeah, so there'll be a glass. It'll be something in the corner there that then will connect up to the glass, and you'll be able to put it on. You know, the average people will be able to buy frames and put it on.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well. Yeah.
Hey, Warby Parker makes them. People. I'm serious. If Warby Parker makes a pair of glass compatible things, people might actually buy them.
That was the rumor, but I don't think it is going to be Warby Parker.
No, I don't think it's going to be Warby either.
Yeah.
I think this is one that like the internet started. I think that we all kind of started that rumor
because it's
of,
a
like,
startup,
you know,
and they should be working with Google because they're both hip and with it.
Exactly, and because hipsters are like, oh, yes, we'll do it. I mean, but totally. I mean, you know, but no, I mean, they definitely need to work with somebody to make them not ugly.
And there's going to be stereo glass. You'll be able to listen to your Google Play music with two headphones. Yeah?
Yeah.
They're going to have headphones instead of bone conduction.
That's short. Well, they already have it. I mean, it's already comes with the...
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
An earpiece.
So Glass 2.0 comes with the earpiece.
Have you already got your Glass 2.0?
Yeah. I just got it on Thursday.
Oh.
And so, you know, and it actually connects to the USB. I thought they put a new audio port, but it doesn't. It just connects to the micro USB port. But so the stereo, which is coming out sort of in the near future, as in like any time now, does the same thing. It just connects to that.
That's how you can do it. USB so you get port. Two of them.
Yeah, you can have both. You can have both. So, which is much better because, you know, the old one, you could barely hear it, especially if it was in a loud room or you're out on the street or that kind of thing.
Because that was bone conductance. It was just trying to get...
Yeah, the bone conductor, which sounds like a cool idea, but it was really difficult.
It didn't sound like a cool idea in 1973 when they were selling the bone phone collar that you... Remember that?
I had one of those.
Yeah, no.
For skiing, it was great.
It's never been a cool idea.
But supposedly...
Put it on. I want to see the whole thing. Put it all on. Let's see it.
Yeah, suit up.
This is what nerds do. Instead of saying take it off, they say put it on.
Earpiece. Yes. As total dorks do. Here, let's take
that, that
one
looks so much better.
Don't
than
forget the earpiece.
Yeah, oh, isn't that?
There you go.
So much
is there a tube to go in your mouth?
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? Like something you could...
Food delivered directly into... I hate having to hold my burrito. I just want it like shot into my face.
See, then we really are like WALL-E. You know, we're all...
It's totally WALL-E world.
It totally.
Yeah. Just feed me information into my cortex.
But the real benefit, I mean, it still looks completely dorky, right? I was not a fan the first time around. What's different, and I really hadn't used it for 3 or 4 months. The difference this time around is there's a lot more you can do with it. My big beef the first time around was just there wasn't a whole lot the thing could do. Now, software-wise, they've added a lot, and then they've also opened it up to some. It's kind of like Twitter, the iPhone, the first time. They had a few partners that they kind of let in and some developers. They could do some things. But next week, they're having their big they released the Glass SDK, and there's going to be probably a big explosion in third-party apps because they're going to let you do a lot more with it if you're a developer. Than they were before. And when I was there, I went to the in San Francisco their fitting area, and it was packed. I mean, it was completely packed. And I asked the guy, you know, is this normal? And they said no. Since they released 2.0, and then they gave all of the original Glass Explorers 2 invites to send to everybody a couple weeks ago, they said it's been massive since then.
It's still $1,500, right?
It is still $1,500. So I'm not sure who's paying $1,500. I guess, you know, rich people in San Francisco that don't have enough things to do with their money. But
People who think they're going to become internet famous. I'm not joking, you guys. Like people who think this is the next wave of like SEO, like internet famous, like web marketing stuff. Those people.
Someone in the chat room shared womenwomenwithglass.tumblr.com. There's a few entries. I scroll down, and there's Christina Warren at the bottom.
well, that is my Tumblr that I created in response to a white dude's with Tumblr. What's funny, actually, is that Bloomberg, whenever they run a story on women with glass, or not glass, on glass in general, for whatever reason, somehow that footage is in their B-roll for Glass. So, like, my Tumblr shows up on Bloomberg anytime they're talking about Google Glass. It's really weird.
That's the only women they can find that have glass on.
Apparently. But, I mean, it's just, like, in the B-roll for any discussions about Google Glass. Now, that was just it came out of a Twitter conversation. But I need to update that. We'll need to get the new Google Glass in, though. We've still got the old pairs in the office. So, we'll need to get
finding
new
pictures
ones.
For this blog must be a full-time job.
There's only really, let's face it, 10 women
the last
with glass.
Entry was 3 months ago.
I know. I've been, as you can tell, I'm very involved. I'm very
hands-on.
Yeah.
I made like everybody else administrator. Like there are like 10 other administrators, but
it's not just you.
Can find another woman to put up there.
Sarah Jessica Parker. I mean, where else is there to go now?
Yeah.
I sort of agree. Hey, she's on Twitter now. I'm so excited.
She made Manolo Blahnik a household word.
She did. Are you absolutely? Yeah. No, SJP. She's now at SJP. She's now on Twitter. It's very
wow. She has a 3-letter Twitter handle.
Well, she is Sarah Jessica Parker.
That's true.
Do you think they saved it for her?
They probably.
I'm sure they hooked that up.
The person who had it before was somebody inactive.
The person who had it before was assassinated by a Bitcoin assassin.
The rumor was that the New York Stock Exchange has been saving the letter, what was it, the letter M for Microsoft, just hoping they'd leave NASDAQ and come to Microsoft. Maybe this whole time, Ev Williams and Dick Costolo were saving SJP, just praying someday Sarah Jessica Parker would come and post pictures of
grilled cheese
sandwiches.
Grilled cheese.
So she obviously got what Twitter's all about right away.
Yep.
Salad.
It's a good-looking salad.
Grilled cheese sandwiches and the Empire State Building.
Those were all taken with glass, I'm sure.
Oh, I bet they... Well, this one might have been.
No, probably not. They're taken with an iPhone, I'm sure.
She uses Twitter for Android.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, nice.
Which I actually did think was interesting. I would have pegged her for an iPhone person.
But she has a phone, too.
She has iPhone, yeah.
Here's a picture of a penny she found on the 14th Street subway platform.
This is high-class entertainment.
Wow.
Completely. No, she's obviously was forced to sign up to promote her AOL thing on the New York Ballet. And but anyway,
good for
she's
her.
On. And that's
she's got half a million followers, more than me, in 3 days.
I should say, in 3 days.
She's Sarah
there you go.
Parker, come on.
We still remember when you were number one.
I'm still bitter. I used to be number one many, many years ago. Speaking of AOL, I'm a little worried about this. Roku and AOL have done a deal to bring live TV news services to Roku. You know, this has to probably has something to do with the David Pogue effort. Oh, no, he's at Yahoo. Yeah. But AOL does do a lot of TV, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they have HuffPost Live and that sort of stuff. So that's, I mean, I think that's probably, they say they're going to, video traffic.
They say they're going to do Wall Street Journal, Associated Press, Reuters, BBC News, HuffPost Live, Newsy, E, CNET, Engadget, ET, Story Hunter, and Global Post. I'm terrified. Why would you even watch Twit when you can watch all of that?
You're not terrified.
No, I'm not at all. Not at all. I've got Jason Heiner. I've got Christina Warren. I don't need those guys. I've got Mark Millian. I've got Michael Rose. And I've got Stamps.com. I never have to go to the post office ever again. Thanks to Stamps.com.
God, you are good.
Just slip it right in there. Stamps.com is actually a really great solution for anybody who's still, and this is the time of year you don't want to go to the post office, finding parking, all the people there who are, you know, mailing packages to Aunt May and putting their Christmas card list on there. Stamps.com has printed, get this, in 1 year, $1 billion in postage. You don't need a postage meter. You just need your computer, your printer, and it'll do international mail for you. Fill out all the forms so you don't have to. In fact, anything you could do at the post office, Stamps.com will do for you faster, better, easier. They even have discounts you can't get at the post office. I love it. They've got a button in the interface that says, tell the mail carrier to come. I've got something. I mean, this is one thing the post office does really well. 6 days a week, they come to your office, right? Well, even if that's not enough, you could still push the button and they'll come again. I love it. Stamps.com. You can save up to 63% on priority mail. Express shipments up to 40% on package insurance, so it will save you money. If you sell items on eBay or Amazon or Etsy, it's great. It'll take the information from your web store and populate the package, you know, mailing label. It'll print right on envelopes if you have to send out billings or invoices or, you know, brochures with your company's logo, return address, and everything. I love Stamps.com. Small business and Stamps.com. Hand in hand, my friends. That's why I want you to visit Stamps.com. Now, you may say that $80 value looks like a great deal right on the front. I'm just going to take that. No, no. Shop around a little bit. Click the radio microphone at the top of the homepage. Enter in our offer code TWIT. You're going to get $110 bonus value. This is something special just for Twit listeners. $55 in free postage you can use over the life of your account. You've got a free digital scale. You just pay the shipping and handling, about $5 on that. $5 supplies kit, you know, stamps you could print right on the stamps. And, of course, a month's trial of Stamps.com. Stamps.com. Use our offer code TWIT, but click that microphone in the corner. You will love it. I do. Wolfram has announced a programming language that incorporates the Mathematica stuff and the Wolfram Alpha stuff so you can write high-level programs that model the world.
There's no one in the tech sphere right now more like a cartoon supervillain than Stephen Wolf. he really, I mean, he's apparently one of the most altruistic sort of
I love him.
Guys, but he's
super
like
smart,
scary, so scary smart. Brain.
Yeah. And this is a really interesting idea. I mean, it's a very high level language. They have already been using it inside Mathematica for 25 years or something similar. But imagine that you could write a language that would pull information together. They want to do a programming cloud, which means you could deploy and launch apps just like you can on Amazon Web Services right now, or Google. What's Google call their thing?
App Engine.
App Engine.
And but you could also run it standalone. I think that's. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it means. But I certainly will be very interested in it. I love it.
The future of programming is not code, though. I think the future of programming, you know, is that it's more it's that stuff fades to the background, and the future of programming becomes about creativity and social science and you know, understanding users. And so, you know, in 2020, I see like a massive, massive layoffs of coders who know computers better than people.
You gotta know people too.
Can't make the transition.
Yeah,
you gotta know people. Yeah. I mean, social scientists are the future of.
Look at Candy Crush. That's not hard software to write.
Yep.
No, it's all about game mechanics and behavioral analysis and gamifying, like figuring out like how you can get people to spend that extra dollar or ask their friend for something that's going to end up leading to another person to spend a dollar. I mean, just last thing I'll say on Candy Crush, I would love to see what their conversion rate is from a user who has never spent a dime to, you know, someone who's spent at least, you know, a dollar or whatever, because I bet it's pretty high. And that's where I think that's why they are so profitable and why they've made so much freaking money.
Russian cosmonauts, occasionally they infect the International Space Station with malware. It happens. Yeah. They bring USB keys up. The funny thing is it's the malware that we wrote, or some government, our government, maybe the Israeli government, wrote to Stuxnet to take down
Stuxnet.
Yeah, to take down the Iranian nuclear enrichment facilities.
In Soviet part of space station. Oops. You.
Whoops. I'm sure they have McAfee in space.
Yeah.
Sure
I
they
do.
I think
that's where he's going.
I think he is in space. John McAfee's on his way. Leonardo DiCaprio. I love this story. I just saw it, looked over your shoulder, and I saw it. Leonardo DiCaprio. And how do you say his name? don't know how to. It's the second richest man in the world, Hogig. And I never heard of him.
Moshiko Hogig. Oh, are you talking about Carlos Slim?
Oh, Carlos Slim is the second.
Moshiko Hogig is the founder of this company, Mobly, which is basically an Instagram clone.
Mobli. Mobly.
Carlos Slim.
I know Carlos Slim. Yeah.
Yeah,
Mexican telecommunications whiz.
Yeah.
He owns Movil.
This is the
$60 million in financing.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Mobley.
Mobley.
What is Leo DiCaprio doing? Is he is he jealous of Ashton Kutcher? He shouldn't be.
Very well could be.
Although, why is Leo DiCaprio involved?
I think, you know, this Mobley, they saw potentially an opportunity in Hollywood, just getting a bunch of celebrities on board and outpacing Instagram that way. And now their focus by bringing Carlos Slim on in the most recent funding round is to target Latin America and to, you know, go after emerging markets.
There's a lot of celebrity tie-ins with photo apps that don't necessarily make sense.
Yeah, there's the new Justin Bieber pictures of selfies.
There was postcards.
Wait a minute. Justin Bieber has a selfie app?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't talk
next
about
story.
Let's see what it's called.
I find Husei kind of intriguing because
Husei
of a sudden
very smart.
My Instagram feed was filled with copyrighted images from famous people. And I thought, what? Why are you copywriting your image? Come on. But this is Husei.
And what's interesting is they are the only people who have write access to the Instagram API, and almost no one realizes that. So they signed a deal before, I think it was even before the Facebook acquisition, in that Husei, they can even upload from the web. So if you are a famous person and you have an agent and some sort of social media manager and you're part of Husei, you can actually upload your own photos complete with your watermarks from a web browser. You don't even have to use the Instagram app. And there is no one else who has write access to the Instagram API.
I admit that I follow Sofia Vergara. I mean, I'm
it's
not
going to be
I'm
ashamed
not,
of.
I'm not ashamed of it.
And respectful distance.
Yeah, I don't follow her within 10 feet after the court order, but I do follow her. And
let's make no mistake. I mean, the fact that the celebrities are on these networks is a huge reason why a lot of people end up browsing the networks. And, you know, there was the rumor, you know, Bloomberg had heard about it. It actually matched some rumors that I'd heard back in August, you know, this week, that Facebook is looking at making ways for it to be easier for celebrities to talk to their fans directly, kind of the way that Twitter works. And you know, that's something that they've had to look at doing, because even though celebrities might have a lot more likes on Facebook, most of them aren't very active on the platform because it's difficult to use the app and use the platform if you have a profile rather than if you have a page rather than a regular user profile.
Right.
And so instead you see a lot of, you know, famous people using things like, you know, Instagram and Twitter and services like that, in large part because they can very easily post from apps like Husei, or because they feel like they can have a more one-on-one connection. But, you know, Facebook is really going to want to get you know, celebrities more active on the main Facebook channel, because that's what ends up bringing lots of users and lots of eyeballs. And that means, you know, lots of potential eyeballs for advertisers. So, you know, having giving celebrities, you know, and who say things like that, maybe more preferential treatment or at least access to the fact that they can put up, you know, watermarked image and other things on the platform is good, because, you know, you look at how many likes and comments that some of those, you know, Instagram images get. I mean, that's great stuff to be able to say, okay, you know, we're getting an engagement here that's off the charts of anything else. So if we're having ads in our stream, that's going to be a much bigger payoff than if, you know, it was just my food, because no one cares about my food. But if they care about Sofia Vergara's, you know, whatever photos she's taking and posting up of herself.
I follow you too.
Well, thank you.
Film girl.
Yes.
All right. I like to end the show with homework, because what would be a show without homework? Your homework is to call your member of Congress and say, I support Jay Rockefeller's Consumer Choice in Online Video Act. If we could get this passed, life would be wonderful. Jay Rockefeller, who is on the he chairs the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, is trying to get cable companies to unbundle channels, force them to sell individual channels instead of packages, bar them, cable, satellite broadcast, and large media companies, from engaging in anti-competitive practices against online video distributors, limit the ability of broadband providers to degrade competitive online video services. Don't screw with my Netflix. Empower consumers with truth in billing protections for broadband internet. I mean, it goes on and on. This is so good that it's undoubtedly going to fail in Congress. But if you like the idea, write your Congress critter. Just say, hello, remember me from SOPA? I'm back. And I want you to support Jay Rockefeller's Consumer Choice in Online Video Act. So there, that's your assignment. Hey, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Jason Heiner from Tech Republic, techrepublic.com, and debonair Google Glasser.
It still looks dorky,
yeah,
but it is more useful.
Anything you want to plug that you're up to these days?
You know, the interesting thing that I'm working on is a lot more long-form stuff. So both on ZDNet and Tech Republic and globally, we have a team of editors across in Singapore and Sydney, Australia, and London, and then Louisville, New York, and San Francisco in the U.S. And we put together packages of stuff. We go deep on one topic a month on ZDNet. And then on Tech Republic, we do really in-depth long-form articles on, you know, really important topics like the one I mentioned, the Israel trying to create the next Silicon Valley was one. We also have one on Munich, which has kind of kicked all proprietary software off their city network and has gone completely open source. That one's publishing next week. So, yeah, come check it out.
And if you're interested in global technology, I love long-form stuff. I don't have time to read it, but
the idea.
The idea is great. And I have like 8,000 articles in my pocket. You know,
these aren't 20,000 words. They're more like 3,000 to 5,000.
Someday I'm going to get to read all those New Yorkers I've got piled up in my closet. Bloomberg Business Week, Mr. Mark Milian, go to the new global tech. You know, it really is interesting. We don't know what's going on. Here's, you know, Pavel Durov, the Mark Zuckerberg of Russia.
Yeah, I spent several hours with him for that story. He's a very reclusive founder of the biggest social network in Russia called VKontakte. And I spent some time with him here in Silicon Valley and when I was overseas a couple weeks ago. He's a really interesting guy. He's a huge fan of the Matrix movies, so he always dresses like in these
black outfits. He looks like Neo, yeah.
Like a scarf wrapped.
Like he actually looks like
around.
A store mannequin in that picture. I don't know, something. Is that really a person or is it just a mannequin posing as Pavel Durov? Very interesting. Bloomberg.com. It's a long URL. What's the easiest way to get
Bloomberg.com/global tech.
That works?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. And thank you, Mark. It's always great to see you. Thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. A new friend of Twit, and I hope you'll come back soon. You can catch him at the unofficial Apple web blog, Michael T. Rose. The T does not stand for Tiberius, unfortunately.
Sorry.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Enjoy Dreamforce. What's going on? Is it exciting?
It's a lot of excitement. I wish I could tell you more about it, but
secret.
I cannot. It would be worth my life to spoil Mark Benioff's Thunder.
Is that tomorrow?
The keynote is actually going to be on Tuesday, so the show opens tomorrow. The the exhibits are open, all the booths and all the demos, but then Tuesday is the big speech and the big show.
Tell Mark to come over someday. I'd love to interview him. Very interesting guy.
I will.
And we would love to have some time. You know, we have a signature interview show. By the way, just had Seymour Rubenstein, the guy who created WordStar, on Wednesday. That was fun.
The strangulation?
Sweet. Yeah. That was so much fun. He's in his 80s. And the stories that he started at IMSI as the marketing director at IMSI. He negotiated with Bill Gates for the rights to programming languages on IMSI. I mean, just an amazing guy. Wow. Yeah, was a lot of fun. That's Wednesday's Triangulation, if you missed it. And I'd like to get Mark on the show. I think he's got a very interesting story to tell. He's quite the visionary.
Yep.
He started Salesforce in 1999 in his San Francisco apartment. It's done all right. He's done all right. It's so great to see you, Christina Warren. You just never fail to impress. You have the best hat in show business today.
Thank you. Thank you.
And a clock that never tells the right time, which we enjoy.
Yes, and a Clueless poster, which is epic and awesome.
Is that what that is? I've been trying to figure out. Okay.
Yep.
Clueless over her left shoulder. What's the story with the clock? Because the chat room's really been having fun with that.
Yeah, I just need to put a new battery in it. And, I mean, that's really the only
story.
She
took the battery out to put it in the smoke detector, and then the rest is history.
Exactly, and then just forgot. No, totally. Just need to put a new battery in it.
So analog.
Christina writes at Mashable.com. Anything you want to plug for yourself?
Well, you know what? I guess the best thing I probably wrote last week was my long overdue review of the new 15-inch MacBook Pro with Retina, and I'm actually pretty happy with how that turned out. I don't want to have to send it back in. That's actually what I'm talking on right now, and I'm going to be very sad to send it back. It's a great laptop.
I'm using it right now, and you're absolutely right. Amazing. I love it.
Love it. I'm very sad to have to send it back. But I mean, that's basically was my last big thing that I wrote. But just keep it tuned to Mashable. You know, we cover tech news and social stuff and lots of cat videos and things about Pokemon fan theories and stuff like that. And the Jean-Claude Van Damme video, if you guys haven't seen that, people in the chat were talking about it. It's pretty amazing.
Well, and you just hired from the New York Times.
Jim Roberts. Yeah.
Jim Roberts.
Yeah.
Huge hire.
Huge news. Yeah, he starts tomorrow. We're very excited. We're very, very excited.
And it's going to be great. And I don't know when you did the redesign, but I just think it looks great. No redesign?
Yeah, it's been about a year.
Okay, I just want to point out, I read Mashable every day. I don't go to Mashable.com. I read it on Flipboard. I read it. I mean, I never see the front page.
That's how everybody reads news now.
Who goes to the front page of anything anymore? It's a nice front page. You should go there more often.
Our tech and product teams have done an amazing job. But yeah, Jim is a great hire. We're super ecstatic about it. I mean, kind of can't believe it. Like, oh my God. Like, you know, because he's
very big.
One of the rock stars of the news industry. So we're really, really excited.
And of course, Lance Ulanoff, my old friend, he's doing a great job there.
Lance
too.
Is amazing, you know, editor-in-chief, and he's a great guy. The very first PC magazine I ever read when I decided to get into computers, he was the graphics editor. And something he wrote was actually in that article. And actually, because of Google Books, I was able to find the original magazine back from 1995. Yep.
There's value to the search engine.
There is.
And does that Scottish guy ever come in anymore, that Cashmore kid? Does he ever stop by anymore, or is he out of it?
You know, occasionally he's still there. Yeah, no, he's still there. He's still there.
I love Pete. It's funny because he's so shy. We tried. He's been on Twit, and we try to get him back. He's been on, was on many times in the early days, and finally, Lisa, his girlfriend, told me he's too shy. He doesn't want to do it. He's shy. He's like the best looking guy in tech, but he's shy.
Yeah, he's so shy.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's great to talk to you all. Thank you for being here. Good news: The Simpsons is going to be available for streaming. You won't have to watch Twit for much longer. That's exciting news. You know, it's not been for you. Can't. I was trying to watch the monorail episode. There's no way to buy the monorail episode without buying some crap DVD that I don't want.
Yep.
Finally.
Season six, Conan, I think, O'Brien is a monorail episode.
That's right. Conan O'Brien wrote it. It's considered by many one of the greatest episodes of television ever made, and you cannot stream it. But you will soon.
Unless
they were. go ahead.
Unless you go to some of the bad sites. You know, there are many sites.
I don't know
there.
Where you could stream it because I looked. Kick-Ass Torrent.
Some of the streaming TV sites
And I could not find it anywhere. And the reason was, obviously, Fox was getting a lot of money for syndication. 24 seasons worth. But now it'll be on FX Now, the mobile viewing app for FX Networks. All right. I think we've done more than enough damage to my credibility and to your time. If your butt isn't numb yet, you're not sitting on these comfortable chairs we've purchased for all of you. Thank you for being here. You can watch Twit Live 3 p.m. Pacific Sunday evening, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC on twit.tv. If you don't get the live version, it's okay. I mean, I wish you would. But if you can't watch live, we will put a version with really loud bleep sounds in it. Available never again. I totally apologize for the deafening bleep tones. There was an error on the factory floor. One of the robots who makes this show went amok and apparently amplified the bleep sounds louder than any human can tolerate. So I've got a new thing now, John, and all the editors. Instead of bleeping profanity, remember Christina said one bad word in this whole show. It's okay. Do what they do in rap videos. Take it and flip it, reverse it, so it's backwards. They'll be like they're listening to Eminem. It'll be the same level. It won't bother anybody. In fact, if you're not really paying attention, you don't know it happened. It's like, what? So I'm sorry. I apologize. Please keep listening to Twit, even though we deafened you. Do whatever you can. Get a cochlear implant. Whatever. I'm sorry. live on demand also at twit.tv and wherever finer podcasts are made available to you. Thank you very much for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit.
It's amazing.
Doing the Twit.